Tell me when you're ready, John. Morning and welcome to... Whoa, okay. That's turned up. Normally you can't hardly hear. Okay, good morning and welcome to the Arizona Massage Board meeting. Let's start off the note. The chair of the Arizona Massage Board reserves the right to change the order of items published on the agenda except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a vote of majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorneys pursuant of ARS Revised Statutes 38-431.03A3. On any items listed on the agenda, all meeting attendees whose presence is not required in the executive session may remain in the board meeting room when the board withdraws to chambers on executive session. Any and all legal action will take place only in open session. Call to order, roll call. So,
Victoria Bowman?
Present.
John Ortega?
Present.
Earl Dusky.
Present. Call to the public pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H. The board may take an open call to the public during the public meeting, subject to reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issue within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review the public and may ask the matter to be put on a future agenda. Is there any call to the public? Thank you. Declaration of conflicts of interest. That is a no. So, review, discussion, and possible action on the board meeting minutes, discussion and approval of the open meeting minutes on April 29th, 2019.
Mr. Chairman, Victoria Bowman, I move that we accept the meeting minutes from 4/29/19. Was that our date?
John Ortega, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. On items for board review, upon the board of a majority of a quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to discuss and consider records exempt. Do I need to read that twice? Yeah. So we'll just go straight into formal hearings. Item 6A, formal hearings number 1, file number 19-133, Philip Dominguez. Is he present?
Yes, we're present.
Okay. Would you like to come forward? And do we have the complainant?
We do. The state will begin with Mr. White, so I was going to just call him forward after that.
Okay. Let me get the script out. Everybody ready? This is the date, time, and place where the matter dealing with case number 19-133 is scheduled to be heard by the Arizona Massage Board meeting. The subject of this hearing is set forth in a complaint and notice of hearing. This is a formal administrative hearing to determine if there has been a violation of the board's rules and statutes and whether disciplinary action is warranted. Board members present for this hearing are
Victoria Bowman,
John Ortega,
Earl Dusky. Let the record show that the board members have been furnished with copies of a complaint of notice of hearing, the respondent's answer if one was filed, all pleadings of record. Appearances. Will the parties please identify first the state and then the respondent.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Michael Rain on behalf of the state.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Scurra with the U.S. Director of Attorneys at Law, representing Philip Dominguez.
You are represented by an attorney, so we've done the thing. Number three.
Oh, wait.
No, we have to go right.
Statement by the chair.
Right. Number one. That's what I thought we were. A hearing of this nature differs from a court proceeding. The technical rules of evidence do not apply. Reliable hearsay evidence is admissible. The board will entertain objections concerning irrelevant, repetition, or otherwise inadmissible evidence. However, the board is the sole judge in the weight given to the evidence received. In the disciplinary proceeding, the board bears the burden of proof, and shall go first and present its case. Then the respondent shall present their case. After it hears all the evidence and the arguments of the parties, the board will deliberate and decide whether to discuss the case or take appropriate disciplinary action. All persons...
Decide to dismiss it or take this...
What?
Not discuss dismiss the case.
Whether to dismiss the case or take appropriate disciplinary actions. So, apologize for that last one. Number four. All persons who are calling as witnesses in this matter, including respondent, please. I don't have to have them come forward. They're already forward. Give your name. Raise your right hands. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Okay. So, before hearing testimony from witnesses, are there any preliminary matters the board should consider?
None from the state.
No, Your Honor, not right now.
Okay. Does the state wish to make an opening statement?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm Michael Rain with the Attorney General's Office. Seated to my left is AC, the complainant in this case. The board is familiar with cases of this nature, and like all the cases, you'll have to decide what you believe in a situation where there's only two people who know what happened. There is some additional indications from Mr. Dominguez's past that we'd like to discuss with you. Past complaints and civil actions, but primarily today will be the opportunity for AC under oath to tell you what she experienced and the impact that it had on her and why she made a complaint, and she's come here today to share that with you, and obviously you're welcome to ask her any questions as well, but I will be helping to lead her through her experience, and then what I think you'll conclude when the matter is done is that simply on November 10th, 2018, AC received a massage from the respondent, Mr. Dominguez, at Massage Envy in Glendale. And during that massage, or before the massage began, she indicated on Massage Envy tablets that she wanted to focus on her neck and shoulders. But what she received was something quite different. Instead of focusing on her neck and shoulders, Mr. Dominguez focused his attention on her lower body, and in particular, techniques that caused his hands to repeatedly touch AC's genitals. He also engaged in draping techniques that left her feeling exposed. As you've heard in many cases involving draping, that draft, you know, the feeling of the air touching her genitals, left her feeling obviously uncomfortable and afraid, and she immediately upon concluding the massage made a complaint online, like a Yelp type review, but then shortly after that, on November 12th, she made a police report and contacted the police and made that claim that she'll make today, that she was touched inappropriately against her wishes, and that Mr. Dominguez engaged in draping techniques that left her exposed. You'll also hear from Investigator White briefly about his investigation. He'll tell you that in the process of investigating this case, he was provided copies of two additional police reports involving three separate massage therapy clients who had also made allegations that Mr. Dominguez had engaged in conduct of the same nature. And so we do believe that there's a pattern there, that while those victims have not been brought before you, you consider that as well in deciding what might have occurred in this case. And when the matter is done, we think you'll conclude that ultimately there was sexual intent here on behalf of the respondent, and that his conduct has harmed, not just had the potential to harm, but has actually harmed AC. Will present some pills that she has, or some expenses that she's had to obtain therapy as a result of this assault that she suffered, and we'll ask at the end of the hearing that you consider awarding her restitution for at least the amount of the out-of-pocket expenses that she's had incurred just to recover from this incident, and that you seriously consider a very severe penalty against Mr. Dominguez in light of his history of complaints against him for this type of conduct, and in particular what occurred to AC on November 10th of 2018. Of course, we'll leave it up to you to decide the appropriate penalty, but the state does believe that revocation would be warranted by the facts, as I've just outlined them. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the respondent wish to make an opening statement?
Yes, Your Honor. The testimony you will hear today will establish simply a she said, he said narrative without providing any definite proof of any wrongdoing on the part of my client, Philip Dominguez. In regards to the prior alleged victims, Your Honor, you will find that there was one other instance where that victim was found to be completely unreliable by the police, so they did not pursue any actions. In fact, what that alleged victim was seeking was a cash grab, which she did get, and it was paid out on Nuisance Valley only. You will find that Mr. Dominguez is professional. He did not use improper draping techniques, and he did not engage in any sort of activity that would violate the dignity of any of his clients.
Okay. Finished?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would the state please call the first witness?
Call Andrew White, please.
Okay. Mr. White?
Yes.
For the record, I would just note that I have passed out a book of exhibits, item 1 through 3. Hopefully all the board members have that, the state's exhibit, given the opposing counsel. Mr. White, do you have a copy there in front of you?
Yes.
Okay. Looking at exhibit 1, do you recognize exhibit 1?
Yes, exhibit 1 is the complaint form that was sent to me from AC to start the initial investigation.
Okay. And then on the narrative portion, it's the second page of the exhibit. You see that where it says summary of allegations?
Yes.
Is this where she placed her description of the event?
Yes.
Okay. And did she cross-reference a police report?
Yes.
And before, we'll talk about the police report briefly, but before going there, one step back, actually, just for the record. I know everyone knows you here, but could you just tell us, what's your role here at the massage board?
I'm the investigator, the only investigator for the state of Arizona assigned to the massage board to conduct initial investigations and final investigations to be presented to the board for their termination if there's a violation of our rules and regulations.
And so were you responsible for the investigation of this matter? That we
yes.
And before working for the board, can you just briefly describe for the record your military and law enforcement background?
Yes, I did 22 years in the military. I was a military policeman and infantry instructor, drill sergeant, master instructor for combat lanes. I ran a evaluation team that was responsible for bringing units up to code in the military. I did 28 years on the Detroit Police Department. I worked 26 years undercover in narcotics. I was a sergeant in charge of a raid crew, and I had been in court probably, from the average about 230 days a year for 28 years. And then I went to the prosecutor's office as an investigator. I've worked in deed fraud for a year. And then I moved out here and I worked at the marshal's office for 4 years. And I've been over here for going on 4 years now.
Thank you. It's quite a history. And thank you for your service.
Well, thank you.
So having investigated this, did you speak with AC by phone or in person?
Yes, on the phone and also through her attorney.
Okay. And did you obtain a copy of the police report that's referenced in her summary of allegations?
Yes.
Okay. And if we turn to Exhibit 2, number of pages, you're welcome to kind of scan through it, but the question I have is this that police report that she references?
Yes, it is.
Do you recall how you obtained a copy of this police report?
Attorney Moore forwarded it to me, and I reviewed it, and at that point I compared the number of on the Glendale number to make sure that it was the actual number, and then after I reviewed the report, I found a few items in there that alarmed me very much.
And so in addition to Exhibit 2, which is the report you just referenced, we also have Exhibit 3, which are some additional Glendale PD reports. Can you just describe for the board how you came into possession of these reports?
In the same manner, Mr. Moore forwarded me two of them, and another attorney forwarded me one also.
Okay. Now, just to be clear, I'm not sure if it was already noted. Is Mr. Moore AC's attorney?
Yes.
Okay. And who's the other attorney that forwarded one?
I have to look in my records.
Was it somebody on behalf of AC or on behalf of the respondent?
It was someone on behalf of AC.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And briefly, could you just describe what was the nature of the incidents in the two police reports in Exhibit 3?
They are sexual assault cases.
Okay. And did two of them involve conduct at a school?
Yes.
Okay. And then there's a third?
Yes.
Okay. Now, they speak for themselves. I won't ask you to read them to us or anything. Did you find that they were relevant, or I don't want you to make a legal conclusion, but they were sexual assault type cases. Did they change your opinion or give you, as to your opinion, as to the truth of AC's claim? Did it change your mind at all?
It didn't change my mind at all. Matter of fact, it enhanced it.
Is that because of the similarities in the past?
That's correct, yes.
Did you have an opportunity to discuss the case at all with Mr. Dominguez?
No.
Did he submit any sort of detailed written explanation?
Through his attorney. It was all denials of what happened.
Is there any reason in particular why you didn't discuss with Mr. Dominguez the case? Did you attempt to and he said no, anything like that?
I sent a receipt of complaint to the individual.
Okay.
And it was not in a timely manner returned, but it was returned with an attorney information on it. At that point, I don't try to contact the individual once they haven't been represented by the attorney.
And having spoken with AC, did she remain consistent? Did you speak with her multiple times?
By computer and by the phone. Okay. Yeah, she's very consistent.
And, okay. Let me ask you just a couple other questions while I have you up there. One thing that AC's description of the events in Exhibit 2, her police report, one thing that she indicates, I'll talk to her about it as well, but the concept of freezing once an assault or the beginnings of an assault might be taking place, she indicates that she kind of froze, didn't get up off the table, that sort of thing.
Yes.
What's your experience with that in the cases you've investigated?
Since I've been here, I wasn't real familiar with sexual assault besides being a police officer handling from the outside, but being an investigator at this, with the massage board, I find that 98% of the individuals freeze, don't say anything, are pushing into a shell. They will not respond by jumping up from the table. They usually let the massage end because they fear for their safety. At the time the massage is over with, then they go. Sometimes it might take 15 minutes. Sometimes it might take a week. Sometimes it takes up to 3 years or even longer for them to come forward to make the complaint because of what happened to them. They've been violated. They've been pushed to a level that their psyche can't handle at that time. So the individual would then make that, once they make that initial complaint, which is most likely to the massage board or to the police department, or maybe to us sometime. They might, and I tell them if they haven't made a police report, go make a police report. It's imperative that you do, so the police can investigate this individual to show sometimes that this individual might be a pattern, have set a certain pattern. He could be a sexual predator. He could be an individual that's just touchy-feely, you know. So it's up to that individual to push it.
In terms of police reports, and you said, you know, making a recommendation that they do file police reports.
Yes.
Have you had experience of what law enforcement does typically when there's just one complainant?
They usually don't pursue the case when there's only one complaint because of the he say, she say type operation. But if it's a penetration, they pursue that more likely than an individual that's touching the top of the vagina, touching breasts, touching the buttocks, okay. That type of stuff.
Do they typically, you know, let's say they have a less severe complaint that they might not be able to take action on because of the he said, she said character of it. Do they dismiss those or do they retain them? What do they do with those?
They put them into like a hamper. They wait to see if this individual gets another complaint. When they get that other complaint, they bring both of those complaints at the same time to the court, and the court will then pursue that individual in the legal system.
Would you agree then that they're looking for kind of a corroboration
yes.
of multiple victims?
That's correct.
Okay. I don't have any other questions for Mr. White, but I would like to move for the admission of the state's exhibits 1-3, which is the Stacy's complaint that references the police report. The police report from her conduct and the additional police reports that Mr. White did there.
The respondent's attorney has any objection to that?
Does the respondent have any?
No, we don't.
Okay, then so moved.
Right.
Yeah, so admitted.
And I had no further questions for Mr. White.
From Mr.
I have no more for Mr. White.
Okay. Do you want to?
I have a couple.
Okay.
Mr. White, why would police decide to file a declination to prosecute? Or why would the state decide to do that in these types of cases?
Usually it's something that corroborates the information. But if the state, like the massage board, we do a complaint, we have a legal obligation to take the complaint to the board. The staff that works with us, we can't turn a complaint away when it shows some type of wrongdoing. The board is the one that's responsible for handling that. So once I get a complaint, I'm going to present it to the board. The board has the right to dismiss it. They can move it to a consent agreement. They can move it to a formal interview, or they can move it to a formal hearing.
And what about when you reviewed these police reports? Not the first police report, but the second. If you read through that police report, how would you account for the variation and inconsistencies in the alleged victim's description of what happened?
Well, I find that an individual that's been sexually assaulted will make various types of statements because of the shock they've been through. Now, if they're lying, that's up to the board to figure out. My job is just to type this information up and present it to the board.
Okay. And then how would you account for an alleged victim who decides that what they really want is not so much prosecution but more of a civil remedy, kind of to make a cash grab?
That's not for me to determine. That's up to the board to do. I'm just here to start the initial investigation and let the board make the decision. That's their job.
So in your initial investigation, even if you come across this evidence, you find various inconsistencies where, you know, they're stating – it goes all over the place. They're stating he touched me here, but then the next time she talks to police, she's saying that he did this. And then you see that there was no prosecution. The police decided unreliable. So you still, even though you see all that, you still see that as a reliable prior offense by, for instance, my client.
Well, if that particular incident doesn't turn me away from this incident. This incident is the one that I'm doing the investigation on. That other information is just corroborate that has been prior accusations against your client that the individual had been deemed a person who does sexual abuse. And that's all it was.
I understand, but what you're essentially what I'm trying to understand is that you're saying that even if the prior incidents were found to be unreliable, unsubstantiated, they did not prove any culpability, you're still going to see it and say this is something that will support the current case, the current findings. So even if my client is cleared, he will forever have a mark on him, you're saying, and you're going to be able to allege that he has prior misconduct?
Yeah, it's just like, I'm going to give you an example. It's just like a police officer that is accused of theft and come to find out that he's never stolen anything. But once it goes to internal affairs, that individual is always going to be marked as a person who's been accused of theft. It's nothing that we can pull back. Once the accusation has been made, it's there, and it's always going to be there.
So you're saying that even if somebody has not been convicted and they've merely been accused but cleared legally, that they will always be seen as an offender?
Yes, I believe that.
Okay.
Yes.
What about the victim's criminal past? Do you take that into consideration?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you this. Probably just on an average daily basis, probably 5 out of 25 massage therapists have previous arrests for something.
I'm sure. I mean, most people in the United States have had a misdemeanor or so, but I'm not speaking about the accused. I'm speaking about the alleged victims. Do you take into consideration their criminal past? Do you take their, for instance, substance abuse past? If they were in rehabilitation, if they have had issues with the law in the past, if they've had a hard life that may have contributed to the current situation where they are looking to maybe redeem themselves. No one doubts that they may have had a traumatic experience, but maybe not through this particular encounter.
It can come into play if it's something recent. If it's something that's had a timely pattern that happened years ago, it don't come into play.
But yet my client's prior that he was cleared of completely comes into play, even though he was never convicted.
Yes, because the police report was made, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No further questions.
Mr. Chair, I do have some follow-up questions, if I may.
Okay.
Mr. White, there was some question about declining prosecution.
Yes.
Is the decision by a prosecutor's office not to prosecute the same as an exoneration?
No.
Okay. And what's the standard of proof in a criminal case?
You have to have the evidence to show that it can... When the prosecutors look at a case, they want a conviction. It has to go to a certain point that they have to be able to take it to a jury or a judge and be sure that they can get a conviction with the evidence they have.
Yeah. And is that a conviction under the beyond a reasonable doubt standard?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is the board standard lower than that?
Lower, yes.
And as you indicated, you don't get to make a choice whether to send a matter for a hearing based on whether you think you'll win or not.
So especially sexual assaults, no.
There was some question to you about the motivations of a complaining witness, or any witness, I guess. Maybe from your experience in narcotics and undercover, did you ever have experience getting tips or tip-offs from people who in their own life weren't real good people?
That's how I made my living. Yeah.
So did you find that... You know, at times, perhaps those were motivated by revenge or some motive other than justice, but that nevertheless it was true.
It can be revenge. It can knock the competition off the map. It can be a money thing, a territorial fight. It can be just a neighborhood dispute. The best witnesses of all are girlfriends or wives. They tell you everything when they're mad at their husband. So you never know. So my job is just to investigate it.
just the fact that someone has a motive for making the report or the tip necessarily mean that it's not a true tip? And you,
no.
Is that your experience?
No, it doesn't matter.
And then I just had one other question about, you were asked a question about, you know, even substance abuse or other issues that someone might have, I think, basically to the question of their credibility. A drug possession crime, in your term, working in narcotics and undercover, is being charged with possession, is that a serious drug offense?
No, that's the low end.
Okay.
That's the light end of narcotics.
In terms of law enforcement focus or priorities, is it their focus, is it usually on the users of drugs or more...
No.
Distributors, sellers.
You target the sellers first, which is the possession with intent to deliver individual. Then the they call it collateral damage. Person with just a drug user, a collateral damage. You catch them if you can, but you go after the shark, which is the seller more likely than the user. They do have operation when they target buyers, and it's called like a reverse things. And that's just to build up a probable cause to show that the individual at that house is selling. And you just build up a stronger case.
I have no more questions.
Okay, thank you.
Does the board have any questions?
Not at this time.
No, not at this time.
Mr. White. Ms. Kern. Investigation. The case was on November
2018? Yes.
Okay. The one previous to that. What was the date on that one?
I'm not going to be right now.
And that was the chiropractor's office?
Yes. One second. Let me get to it. I know it's a 2017 case. You got one 2017 case, and then you got two 2016 cases. So the offense date for one is 1/9/2016.
Okay, then what was it?
1/9/2016. Let me see.
That one was located at where, the school?
Yes, that the 2016 case at the school. And then you have one that's... The 2017 case is...
Might be
what it is. I done read it about 20 times. No, 6/12/2017. And then you have one more.
And that one was at a chiropractor's office?
Yes. Might have been 1/9/2016.
You gave me that one.
We got that one.
Okay. And then 6/12/17.
Yes.
And I saw
excuse
one.
Me. John, there's one here at 12/27/15.
Yes. That's the other one, yes.
What is it?
12/27/15. Was that the massage school?
Yes. We got a 16 date.
So we got 1/9. I'm seeing a 6/12/17. But.
What page are you seeing the 6/12/17?
Yeah, I don't.
Okay. We're not numbered.
Yeah. But on. Well, I'm trying to see this one. just trying to elaborate this evidence here because there's on page.
Mr. Chair?
Sir?
I mean, I can maybe help direct you to where the dates are found.
Okay.
In Exhibit 3, which are those other police reports, the report is page numbered. It's on page 3 in the narrative section. On 12/30/15, the getting a massage from Mr. Dominguez has been described to what occurred. And subsequently, about on the bottom third of that paragraph, they describe the other individual. There were two separate individuals complaining from the school, had massages on 12/27 and 12/28/15.
Correct.
So those are the dates of the school massage, 12/27, 28, and 30, involving two people. And then the second incident is a little harder to direct you to in terms of page numbers, but the narrative starts near the back. Well, in the narrative, page numbers of page 3, page 2, page 4 of 5. So it's on page 5 of 5. The individual says, about a week ago, she was involved in a car wreck and went for a massage, and then describes the incident. So about a week earlier, and then a few pages earlier, this was around January of 2016.
So. That's correct.
Give or take, all of them occurred right around the end of 2015, beginning of 2016. But I think the order was the likely school ones first, and then the other one.
Then you had a chiropractor one at 6.
The chiropractor is the one in the beginning of 2016. That's the second police report in Exhibit 3.
So what is 6/12/17 then? Is that the case?
I don't know.
That's the one from Glendale also.
That could be.
So I'm trying to figure out if there's more here than.
No, that's all it is. So
it could be just the timing. Well, yeah. I may have it, the dates wrong, but.
Yeah, I think he got the dates wrong, but the
cool,
the 2017 was made by itself.
That's
the chiropractor one. At 40 North Central Avenue. That's the chiropractor one.
Okay. Oh, okay. But you see what I'm saying?
At the beginning of the narrative, it says on April of 2017, I was assigned to investigate the case, the officer writes. So it was sometime before April of 2017. And there, again, she talked about something from an accident much earlier. Not much earlier, but months earlier.
Okay.
So I do believe that the two school incidents, or three incidents involving two individuals at the school, were all late December 2015, and that the incident involving the chiropractic office was
2017.
The beginning of 2017.
Yes.
First third.
Okay. So 4/7.
Yeah.
So
there's one that shows
cough.
At 4/7/2017.
Right.
I do believe that that's the date.
That's the one from the chiropractor office.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I do believe that that's the date it was recorded, Mr. Chair, not necessarily the date of the incident. And the report talks about it having perhaps been a little bit earlier than that.
Looking at the narrative, it's saying on 6/12/2017, that's the investigative meeting with that individual.
Okay. And ma'am, which one did you say was... Which one was...
Okay. Just to get you back on track.
Okay.
You're questioning Mr. White right now.
Okay. So were any of these... looking for the right word. Nullified, dropped?
No. No, on the On the one case, they made a settlement. The other two, they didn't.
Which case did they make the settlement on?
I think it was the chiropractic case.
Okay.
The other two, they went to a dormant stage where they didn't move on. They never did close them.
Okay, lack of evidence or?
Same thing, he say, she say. And it wasn't reported to the massage board. None of these cases were ever reported to the massage board at all until her case, AC's case. And that's when Mr. Moore let me know about the other incident, and he forwarded me to copy the police report at that time. After he had to wait for him, just like I had to wait for him.
Right.
But once he got him, he forwarded it to me at that point.
So nothing just ever happened with those, and then the other one was a settlement.
Yeah, there's no such thing as closing the sexual assault case out at all since the O.J. Simpson stuff.
Okay,
they don't close them no more. they're dormant. They just sit there and wait for other evidence to come forward.
Okay, that was the point I was trying to do. But the settlement would be it was settled. And
yeah.
Do we have any idea what the settlement was?
No, they won't tell me that. Yeah.
Okay. But that leaves it at what level? That leaves it at just that it was settled?
Yes, it was settled. Okay. Yes.
All right. Do you guys have any other questions? Okay. Because I wasn't clear on all the dates.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, any additional witness? Or did you guys?
Did Mr. Rain have another
question?
Yeah. Additional witness?
Yeah, I would like to call AC.
Okay.
And AC, did you file a complaint with the board regarding a massage from Mr. Dominguez?
Yes.
Okay. And did you file the police report that had been referenced as Exhibit 2, and you have a book of exhibits in front of you, but did you file a police report with Glendale?
Yes.
Okay. And as of today, is that complaint still open?
The papers have been submitted to the district attorney for criminal charges, so we're waiting on that. And then I have hired an attorney to represent me in a civil case.
But have you filed any sort of civil action?
Not yet.
Okay. So at least as far as you know, it's moving forward in some capacity.
Yes.
It hasn't been.
Yes.
Okay, well, let's talk about you generally before we jump into what occurred when you had the massage. Do you have a history before this incident getting any massages?
Yes.
Okay, can you just tell me how many you think before this incident have you had?
Over 30 massages.
Over 30. Okay, is there a condition or any issue that caused you to get so many, or is it varied? Can you describe why you were going for massages before?
It's my self-care.
Okay. And in terms of the types of places you went to, was it you just described that for the board, your history of getting massages before this incident?
I've been to Massage Envy numerous times and at different spas. And my mom had a friend who was practicing massage therapy, so I get massages from her as well.
Okay. But if I understand self-care, meaning there wasn't some injury or anything that you were really focused on healing as much as the usual aches and pains, something might hurt more one week or...
Yeah,
something
I
like
find
that.
Massage is very soothing
and relaxing. Okay. And in your past of getting any massage treatments, had you ever had any sort of problems with those massages that would have caused you to file a complaint or in hindsight file a complaint?
No.
And had you been to this Massage Envy, the Glendale location?
No.
Okay. And had you ever had Mr. Dominguez as a masseuse or a massage therapist?
No.
Okay, and so let's talk about that visit in particular. Was there anything hurting you or troubling you that day that caused you to go get the massage?
It was actually just my boyfriend's birthday, and so we like to get massages, so I got him and I a massage for him.
Okay, so was he then there with you that day?
Yeah, he was in a separate room because they did not have couples rooms.
And do you typically have any preference when you get a massage between a male or a female therapist?
Yeah.
And so you didn't express any this time, I take it?
No.
Now, when you go to Massage Envy, you've been there many times before this massage?
Yeah, but the one on Camelback.
But the one on Camelback. Are they pretty corporate where it's similar processes in each location?
Yes.
Okay. Was there anything really different about this visit? Okay. So if you could just maybe describe for the board, to the best of your memory, like that, those initial steps, walking in the door, filling out forms, what occurred before you got in the massage room?
I filled out one of the iPads, and I carried my stress in my neck and my shoulders, so that was where I typed on the keypad. And also, I believe I did my arms and my legs as well.
But you recall expressing that the neck and shoulders was a focus area?
Yes.
Okay, but additional areas as well?
Yes.
Okay. And is that new or different from past time at Massage Envy, this putting information in tablet? Has that always been there?
Yeah.
Okay. And have you had therapists bring that up specifically? Oh, looks like you want your legs hurting today, right leg. So they've discussed that with you. In addition to filling out the iPad, is there any other thing you did before you met Mr. Dominguez to describe what you were looking for that day?
No.
What is there a type of massage that you purchased in particular, or kind of customizable, discussed with the therapist massage?
Yeah.
Is that normal for you? Do you have any preference in terms of, you know, the types of massage? We all, you know, hear different types of massage all the time, but in terms of like a deep tissue or relaxation, is there something that you typically like to get?
Deep tissue, but not too deep.
Okay. So a little pressure is okay,
yeah.
But pain isn't what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Okay. And in this instance, similar for this massage, you know, a little work, but more relaxing overall?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you fill that out on the iPad, and then you meet Mr. Dominguez. Does he describe for you at all or discuss with you at all what you had put on that iPad?
He asked what I wanted him to focus on specifically, and it was my neck and shoulders.
Okay. And so that's in addition to whatever you typed, if
yes.
He saw that. Did he describe having seen what you put on the iPad at all? You say, look, you know, looks like here you want neck and shoulders, maybe your legs. Did you do any of that?
No.
Okay. But he did ask you specifically.
Yes.
Okay. So then I understand essentially that you're given opportunity to disrobe and begin the massage. Did he leave the room when you were disrobing?
Yes.
Okay. And what level did you undress to that day?
I kept my underwear on.
Okay. And anything else up to that point? You're disrobed, you're ready, he enters the room, I take it. Anything else noteworthy in that period of time between a normal massage, quote-unquote? Okay. So I understand that... you know, a primary issue in your complaint, or one of the main issues in your complaint, was draping and feeling exposed. If you could just maybe walk the board through the first feeling. Did you begin on your back or on your stomach?
My back.
Okay. So lying on your back, can you describe how you recall being draped? What was being covered? And
I mostly remember what was not covered, and it was my butt.
And did you feel exposed from the beginning of the massage, or did the drape move around and then you became felt exposed?
No, I felt exposed right away because all my genitals were quite cold.
Yeah, you could feel a breeze, so to speak. Were you uncomfortable? Had you ever felt that before with draping from a different therapist?
No.
Okay. Did you say anything at that time? Hey, can we pull that down a little?
No.
Okay. Did you think much of it at that time? I mean...
It registered that it was uncomfortable, but nothing was inappropriate at that time to really alarm me.
Okay. At least as what you felt, were you able to look down and see what was exposed and what was not from your position?
No, I was... facing down.
Yeah, so the only thing you knew is you felt the air. Okay. And what type of underwear were you wearing? Was it a thong-style underwear or more traditional?
It was a thong.
Okay. And so I understand that there was some massage of your glutes or your buttocks. Mm-hmm. Have you had massage therapists massage your buttocks before?
Yes, but glutes? The males who have given me massages, I've never felt comfortable with my buttocks. So I've never had that done by a male.
Okay. Was it your experience before that if you had to tell them that, or they just wouldn't
no,
do it?
No, they would always ask.
Okay.
If I felt comfortable.
And is that at Massage Envy as well as other places?
Mm-hmm.
And so you didn't ask for it?
No.
Did Mr. Dominguez discuss it with you at all before he began?
No.
Okay. Now, I understand by that point you had already felt a little uncomfortable because of the breeze and the draping. But did the method or the manner in which Mr. Dominguez massaged your glutes also make you feel uncomfortable in itself? I mean, just for any, even if you'd approved a glute massage, how did you feel about the technique? Was it therapeutic in nature, or were you concerned it had more sexual intention?
I'm not here today because of my glutes. So, I mean, at that point, it was fine. I've had butt massages before.
So it wasn't necessarily a groping where immediately
you're
like, what is going on? Okay,
right.
Fair enough. Okay, didn't really discuss it, but did you feel that the massage and the draping that you ultimately had your entire buttocks exposed?
When he started to move his hands towards my genitals is when it was alarming.
Okay. Well, then let's skip to that. So at some point, did that any of that occur while you were still lying face down?
Yes.
Okay. And just maybe describe for the board in your recollection of the first instance of that.
Well, I was facing down, and I've never had somebody's fingers be so close to my labia before and rubbing the labia.
And what was he doing as he was getting close? Where was he working? Was it your thighs or your buttocks?
Yeah, it was
time?
My thighs.
Okay. And so, in your past, if I understand you right, there wasn't even, you know, someone getting within, 6 inches, 4 inches of the region?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you say he's touching that. Is that, like, as he's doing massage strokes going up towards your genital region, it would make contact and then back down.
At the beginning, yes.
Okay. Almost as though it was incidental. Is that a fair description of the technique? I mean, someone could go and immediately start touching someone's genitals and stay there, or
no,
there could be this kind of bumping.
No,
into
it was stroking.
Okay. And at that point, I imagine you felt something was wrong.
Yes.
Okay. Did you say anything at that point?
No.
Okay. Did you have any suspicion that maybe it was incidental? Or were you pretty sure then that it wasn't?
With the draping and that on top of it, it felt like he meant to do it.
And you described, I believe, a technique where he placed his hand on your pelvis and let his hand rest, so to speak, so that his fingers fell down, his hand facing towards your feet. Describe that technique that he used as well.
That's when I was on my front, or when I was facing the other way. And on my left side, he had his right hand pushed on my pelvis, and then he was stroking my labia with his fingers.
Okay, so he wasn't... If I describe, and, you know, we have an audio recording, so we can't see your hand movements later, but I understand what you're saying is it was no longer focusing on any other muscle group.
He was focusing definitely on the labia.
Okay. And the obvious question, I guess, is did you request that he perform any sort of sexual act on you?
No.
And did you want him to perform any sexual act on you?
No.
Okay. And when you were lying on your back, how was the draping as he was performing that technique you described? Did you feel exposed while you were on your back as well?
Yes.
Was it a similar feeling in terms of the breeze? Is that how you felt it, or did you see it?
I feel like I was more covered when I was upright, but it was still loose in that area. But I don't think the sheet was completely off.
But at least from your perspective, was the draping adequate to make you feel comfortable at that time? And did he do that technique that we described where, you know, palm on the pelvis and the fingers? Did he do that with both hands or repeatedly? Can you describe, like, how long did that take place?
In my head, it felt like forever. I have no idea how long it really was. Definitely more than a few minutes.
So we're not talking about a bump or maybe 1 second.
Yeah.
An extended period of time. Now, I understand from your complaint that you had noticed at the end of your massage, as you're, I assume, getting up or able to kind of see that your underwear had been tucked into your labia. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you recall how that happened exactly? I mean,
the only thing I can think of was when he was moving that close with his fingers, how it goes.
Yeah, and you've worn, that's your underwear you were wearing. I imagine you'd worn that pair and pairs like it before. Is that something you experienced without some sort of outside force? And because your underwear was tucked into your body a little bit, how were you exposed completely at that point?
Yes.
Other than the very center of your vulva, was the rest of your genital space. In addition to that, what we've described, or you've described for the board, during the massage, was there anything else that was uncomfortable for you besides the draping and the touching you've described? Okay, I just want to be sure I didn't leave anything out. And then, so the massage concludes. Was that pretty routine in terms of, you know, get a glass of water, I'll wait outside,
yes.
Anything weird there?
No.
Okay. And what did you do after you left? Did you pay for your massage?
Yes, because I was talking to my boyfriend as well, and he was still in there.
Okay. And did you tell anyone? When was the first person who was the first person you told when you had left that, wow, that was not what you had asked for?
In the car, I told my boyfriend.
Did you guys make a plan or discuss what you might do with this information moving forward? In terms of, hey, you need to make a complaint, or we should talk to Massage Envy?
Yeah, I told him I would make a complaint later.
And then I understood you made a Google review or a Yelp-style review.
Yeah,
online.
I did that immediately after while we were.
Okay. And I had a page open here from your police report. Can you just read what you wrote?
Do not book with Philip if you are female. I've never felt so violated by a massage therapist. We'll be speaking to a manager ASAP. Was too uncomfortable to address it while I was leaving. I needed to get out of there.
And why did you post that?
For other women.
For other women. Okay, because am I right that you could go back to Massage Envy? Would you feel comfortable saying not?
Yes.
Okay. And then I understand it wasn't too much longer that you went and filed a police report. What caused you to take that additional step? Did you have any discussions, or is that always the plan?
I was really depressed. I did not get out of bed on Sunday and half of Monday. And then I spoke to my mom, who called her massage therapist friend. She said, no, that's completely inappropriate. And so that empowered me a little bit to make the phone call.
Okay. And then you made a police report. Did you speak with an officer and describe the incident as it appears from this report?
Yes. Okay.
And how much contact did you have? Was it like a one-time thing where you explained it, or had they called up, followed up with you?
I've talked to the police numerous times.
Okay. And did you have to fill out a police report that you signed your name to?
It was not in person. I did it over the phone.
Do you understand, as you sit here, that if you had made a false report to police, that you could get in trouble for that?
Yeah.
And has anyone from the police or other than Mr. Dominguez's, his attorneys or himself, has anyone indicated you that they believe you've made a false report?
No.
And did you make contact as well with the Massage Envy staff?
Yes.
Okay. When did you do that?
Monday.
Monday, what day was the massage?
The 10th, Saturday.
Okay. So that Monday you make a report. How did you do that, by phone or?
Yes, by phone.
And you just maybe just briefly describe how that played out.
I just asked to speak with the manager. I told her what had happened. She apologized. She sent me, she emailed me a victim's pamphlet and asked if I would be pressing charges. And at that point, I didn't know I would be pressing charges.
Was there any follow-up from Massage Envy after that?
No.
And let's talk about the impact that this had on you. You said, you know, you were depressed, didn't want to get out of bed. And how long did that feeling persist?
Consistently, it's more so the anxiety that's consisted. you know, the uncomfortability being around men in general has been uncomfortable.
Have you sought out any mental health services?
Yes.
And I have in front of you, and I've given a copy to counsel. I'll have to pass this around to the board members. But I have a document that you provided me. What are we looking at this document?
Those are just dates of therapy appointments.
Okay. So did you seek out mental health care related to this incident in particular?
Yes.
Would you have had that visit if you hadn't had this incident? I mean, were you already seeing a therapist?
No. Not at this time.
Okay. And so this indicates that some services and some payments. Do I see right that you had payments at least on two occasions of $135?
Yeah. There's another page to this. There was three more that we have documentation for the time.
Okay. So what you gave me today doesn't have it there?
Correct.
There's okay. Just not the sheet. If
yeah.
I gave them a copy, I might have given them a page two.
Okay.
So did you bring today an additional page, or you just know that there are additional charges?
No, yeah, there were two pages and then
I apologize. I thought I had two copies of the same document, but that's my phone. And I'll show you page one here. It's the page. Sorry about that. My mistake. So take it back. I see five separate payments of $135 to this therapist. Were these all related to your treatment related to this incident?
Yes.
Okay. And then I can just show it. There's not a whole lot to it. It just shows the expenses, but I don't know if you would want to look at it again or if I can pass it to the board. I'm going to just approach Mr. Chair and hand this.
Mr. Rain, are you offering that as an exhibit?
If we could have that marked or admitted as exhibit four, the state would so move.
And are you going to be able to get counsel a copy?
I believe so. We can burn one while we're here, I think.
Email is fine. Yes.
Questions on you, so just you can ask the complainant after Rain is done.
I want your copy. Well, I mean, yeah, I think it did. Okay. So the state would move to admit that document as evidence of AC's out of pocket expenses for purposes of possible restitution.
Okay. Any concerns?
The only objection I would have is if she's already seeking civil restitution through her other attorney, then if you award that amount here, how many times does he have to pay it?
The statute is limited to fees for the services rendered by the massage therapist. Under your statute and then the general statute, 32-3225, restitution is for fees paid, not for resulting damages.
Okay.
But you can consider the fact that she went to seek therapy. It's just that wouldn't be included in a restitution award.
Okay. Thank you.
Was that admitted?
Yes.
So admitted. So you indicated just general discomfort being around men subsequent to this. How has it affected your desire to get a massage from a massage therapist?
I have not.
Have you had one since?
No.
Do you attribute that to this incident?
Yes.
I don't want to cut you off if you're about to say something.
It's just the anxiety that was so bad. Like, I was fearful, and I didn't know what I was fearful of till going to therapy and realizing, like, it stemmed from this situation.
Okay. Did you have, I mean, you said you had some different approaches if you had a male therapist versus a female therapist. So before this incident, is it fair to say you had some boundaries and you had some, lack of a better word, modesty, where you would be more comfortable with a female therapist than a male therapist?
Doing my glutes, yeah.
Okay. And I don't want to ask you to go into any great deal of detail about it, but did you have any trauma in your childhood or anything that caused that, or was that just general preference?
General preference.
Okay. Okay. And I do understand that you might consider pursuing a civil action. Would that be against for damages or recoveries of financial award?
To be honest, I just got a lawyer because that's what I was told to do. Like, I'm just doing what he tells me I should do. I don't care about restitution. I care that this guy isn't with vulnerable women naked in a room alone. That's it.
And in terms of your... Well, let's talk about one thing that they brought up with Mr. White, which was whether someone who has criminal background or anything can be a reliable witness. Have you been charged with a crime in the past?
Yes, in 2012, I have a drug possession charge as well as a shoplifting charge, and I was under the influence. I got sober in 2013. I've been sober for 6 years. I just graduated with my bachelor's degree in social work and starting my master's program today in social work. So my history is nothing like my life today.
And in terms of your drug charge, do I understand right, that was possession?
Yes.
And in terms of the remedy, were you put through the courts in any kind of diversion or drug and alcohol treatment program?
No, I was not on anything except probation, and I voluntarily went into a four-month treatment center.
The inpatient?
Yes.
And what was your... sober date, you have that?
June 14th, 2013.
Okay. And what type of crime was it? Was that a misdemeanor or a felony?
The drug charge was a felony that was reduced after 2 years of probation. And the shoplifting was a misdemeanor.
And did you have to disclose that when you applied for these graduate program?
No, but I did have to do it to get my internships. I had to get a fingerprint clearance card.
Okay. So you're aware that your criminal record is available to the public in terms of, fingerprint results and everything? Did you file this complaint for any motives other than what you just indicated in terms of protect other people?
No.
And did you know Mr. Dominguez before this incident?
No.
Do you have anything against him personally before this incident?
Before this one.
And subsequent to the incident, have you had interaction with him on a direct basis?
No.
Has he contacted you directly or attempted to contact you directly at all?
No.
Through his attorney or otherwise, have you received any sort of written or verbal explanation of what happened from his perspective?
No.
So I take it there's been no apology of any kind?
No.
And do you know from your experience or your interactions with Massage Envy what did they inform you of that?
No, but I do know he was fired because I did call.
That's what you were told on the phone?
Yes, that he was fired.
And before you filed your complaint, were you aware of these other instances?
No, I had no idea until my lawyer told me.
If you, do you typically research a massage therapist's licensure history before you?
I have never.
No. Okay, now moving forward, if you ever do go get massages, do you think that's something you would do, is just check out whether they have a disciplinary history?
I don't think I would go to anybody unless I was referred by somebody I know.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, well, I know this is your complaint, and I want to give you the opportunity if you have anything else that you wanted to add to tell the board, and that's okay if you don't.
I do want to say that I'm not the only person. I'm the fourth person. I'm just the only one here in front of you. So I hope that you take the other female victims' voices into consideration because I'm here for all of us and potentially future victims.
Ms. Fader, does have any more questions?
Thank you. Questions against examination within time?
Yes. Ms. C, I know that this is difficult for you, so I will try to be as delicate and brief as possible. What did you do, again, immediately following the visit?
There was a surprise party for my boyfriend at our house. So immediately after, I took him home where we had a surprise party for him.
Okay. I'm sorry, I should have clarified. I mean, what did you do in regards to the encounter immediately following the visit?
I paid him up.
Okay. And when did you contact the police?
Monday.
How many days after the visit was that?
Well, it was Saturday, so I went Sunday and then called Monday.
Okay. So it's safe to say that you didn't submit to any sort of forensic examination on your body by the police?
So that is actually the wrongdoing on the police. They can actually do a DNA swab within 48 hours, but they did not follow protocol, so they did not come to my house to get the DNA swab,
okay,
even though they could have. I didn't even find that out till later I talked to a detective.
Okay, so you did not have a forensic examination, correct? No? Okay. I was waiting for her to answer. Okay, sorry. Okay, so you have talked about your past, and my question is just short. What was the dangerous drug that you were in possession of?
Methamphetamine.
Okay, so have you had a substance abuse problem in the past?
Yes, I went to treatment in 2012 and got sober in 2013.
Okay. How long were you at the Solution again?
The Solution was a halfway house. That is not a treatment center.
Oh, okay.
So I went from a treatment center for 4 months and then went to the Solution maybe 3 months, 2-3 months.
Okay. And can you clarify to me what the purpose of the Solution is? Is it sort of part of your treatment from rehab from meth, or what was the Solution? What was the purpose of it?
It's community, and it's meetings, and it's affordable housing, because as a drug addict, you can't really afford housing. So it's kind of a step after inpatient treatment.
Okay. And do you support or do you subscribe to change.org?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, so, subscribe like on Facebook?
No, not necessarily like subscribe on Facebook, but like do you subscribe to their philosophies, for instance, on change.org?
I'm not familiar with the philosophy.
You're not familiar with change.org?
No, I've signed several petitions.
Okay. So you support women in general, I'm going to assume, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you support the narrative of Believe Women Now?
What was that?
Do you support the narrative of Believe Women Now? Do you support the Me Too movement?
Well, yeah, of course.
Okay. And have you ever sought psychiatric therapy prior to this encounter?
For my drug addiction, yes.
Okay. How long were you in psychiatric therapy for that? Roughly.
I mean, it's been... I don't know how long because it's never been, like, consistent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence?
No.
Okay. So when you stated your experience at Massage MB, you stated that when you started, you were face up, but you felt your buttocks exposed. Could you elaborate on that?
No, when it started, I was face down.
Oh, okay. Thank you for the clarification. Okay. Do you watch the news frequently, Ms. C?
No.
No, you've never watched the news?
I don't have cable.
Okay. Do you read the news on your mobile device?
Whatever's on Facebook. I don't like listening to the news.
Okay. Have you ever followed the many lawsuits involved with Massage Envy and the large payouts?
I did hear about it years ago, yes.
Okay. So you're just familiar that Massage Envy likes to avoid conflict and pay the victims large sums of money to go away?
No, I never read into it. But I have nothing against Massage Envy. I feel like they did everything they could have.
Okay. So you said you made a report with the manager at Massage Envy. Did she or he refer you to the risk management department?
I'm not really sure what. They just sent me the pamphlet, and I didn't read the pamphlet because shortly after that I contacted the lawyer and the police department, who also gave me more information.
Okay. So just to clarify, how long after the incident did you hire Mr. John Moore?
I called them the same day on Monday.
So you called, did you call them before or after you called the police?
After. And it was my mom who called them.
Okay. And has Massage MV made any sort of settlement offers that you know of to Mr. Moore?
No, we have not started a civil case at all yet. We're waiting till the criminal charges are filed.
Okay. So I heard your statements, and I understand that you said you retained Mr. Moore because you want to ensure that this doesn't happen to any other woman, correct?
Correct.
So you retained a civil attorney who's known for aggressively pursuing large sums of money against businesses to stop this from happening to other women.
I knew nothing about him. My mom talked to her attorney who referred us to him. So I know nothing. I'm just following the lead of my elders, to be completely honest.
Okay, so you're not expecting any sort of large recovery, even knowing that they'll pay nominal amounts that are usually double digits before the comma, knowing that they might make you go away.
I'm a social worker. My thing is not money at all. It never has been, and it never will be. Like, my career choice should say it all. I'm not in anything for the money.
Okay, so you just hired Mr. Moore not for the money.
Correct. I'm following the lead of my elders.
But you understand that if there's a recovery, it's not your elders that will obtain the money, but you, correct? Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Questions from the board?
Does Mr. Rain have any redirect?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
No.
I do have one question. On the patient's information, what does diagnosis code
308.3 stands for? I have no idea. What? Okay, just, well, I know there's a procedure code, yeah.
And then there's a diagnosis code.
Oh.
That's fine, thank you.
You see, Jess, before you got to the party, was the Yelp code, was the Yelp announcement already made at that point?
Yes, as my boyfriend drove, and while he was driving back to the house, I had done the review. Because
Okay, so you'd started action before you even got to the party?
Yes.
Even though you already had previous plans?
Yes.
Okay. Excuse me. Do you normally, did you state, I'm just for clarification, have you ever had your buttocks massaged before?
Yes.
Is it through the sheets, under the sheets?
Both.
And you're just, it's just not your thing?
I wouldn't feel comfortable with men doing it. It's just a private area.
Okay. And so when men ask you, basically just say no.
Yes.
Okay. The labia being, were you draped enough that when you said he was stroking the labia,
mm-hmm.
was that through a sheet or?
No, it was not through a sheet.
So there wasn't even a sheet there? Okay. So it was that loose?
Yes.
And or it was coming from underneath? That wasn't. Questions?
I think I have another question. On the tablet, when you checked in, was there a place to give permission for the massage or the
Yes, and I left those blank because when you click it, it turns dark of where you want to be massaged. So I left the middle section. I didn't click any of that.
We haven't heard anything from Philip.
Well, you need to
keep
the state rest, and then
okay.
It's their turn to go.
Okay. So, any other questions then?
No, stay right. We're good?
Okay. Okay, Ms. Respondent, which call your respondent want to call your respondent?
Yes, Your Honor, I call Philip Dominguez. Okay. Philip, can you tell me how many hours of training you completed in order to obtain your degree and your license?
Over 700 hours at Cortiva.
Okay. And when did you take your exam, roughly?
Roughly, around March. Yeah.
Do you remember what year?
Not sure about the year. Like 2 years ago?
2 years ago, so probably 2017.
Yeah.
While you were in massage therapy school, were you trained in the proper techniques of draping?
Yes.
Okay. And are you familiar with something called the sumo or the diaper drape?
Yeah.
Can you explain what that is?
So, with the diaper drape, you take the sheet, and you drape below the knee, and, well, the way I was taught in school was you bring over the knee, and then you, make sure the draping stays tight, and you pull it to the side where it won't expose anything towards the inside. I'm supposed to stuff to explain for me right now, without showing it on the actual body, but you pull it over and you make sure it doesn't go above. It stays above the knee and then tight, and then there's no exposure at all.
Okay.
On both sides. Well, you could do both legs, or one, but I usually do one leg at a time, so I just do a left leg or right leg, but basically the same principle.
Okay. And then while you were in school, did you start working at Massage Envy in Glendale?
When I was in school?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No? Okay. When did you start working at Massage Envy in Glendale?
November.
And how long... More or
sorry, towards the end of October. Sorry, October, and then I ended up on November. Yeah.
And while you were there, about how many clients did you see average, like a week?
Average a week, maybe about eight. Econ, because I was brand new, so you got to build up your reputation as a new therapist. So you're either working with a few clients, and then mostly as a spotback. So getting paid like below minimum, but just making your hours there.
Okay. And did you have a direct supervisor?
Yes.
Okay. Did anybody supervise your massages?
No.
No. Okay. While you're at Massage MB, was there a certain protocol? For instance, when you received a new client, did you get a tablet? Did it tell you specific things that you could and couldn't do on it?
Yes. The tablet says what the client is comfortable with getting worked on. And then you go by that, and if before you start, you ask the client if they want to make any changes, and then they're allowed to make a change on the tablet and then sign for it.
Okay.
And then once that's done, you can either you start the treatment.
Okay. And did Massage MB have any sort of areas that were absolutely prohibited?
Yes.
And what were those areas?
Breast and groin area.
During your time at Massage MB, were all of your clients women?
No. I mean, I do both male and female, so.
Do you recall any specific client, any specific encounter?
I do not.
Did you ever have a client ask you to massage their buttocks?
No.
Is there, I'm sorry, did you ever have a client ask you to massage their breasts?
No.
Have you ever had a client ask you to massage their pelvis or their genital area?
No.
No. Do you recall the incident with Miss AC?
I do not.
Prior to today, did you recall what Miss AC looked like?
I do not. I do not.
Have you ever had any clients file a complaint about you while you were at Massage MB?
No.
Did you ever touch any client inappropriately in a sexual manner?
I did not.
Can you describe anything about the date of the alleged incident?
No.
Prior to being notified of this incident, and I know I've asked this, but it's very important.
Yeah.
Did you have any recollection of that day?
No, I did not.
Did you have any recollection of after, like when you were released to go home from work?
No.
When did you first find out about this?
I found out through the phone, through my manager saying that to come into work that following Monday, and then because there was something, there was like an investigation being conducted, so I wasn't allowed to come in, so I was out of work since then. And after that, maybe like a few weeks later, I got another call saying that due to the circumstances that happened, that occurred, I was let go.
And did you ever speak to police regarding this incident?
No.
Have you ever been convicted of a sexual assault?
No.
Do you have any sort of criminal history?
No.
No further questions.
You said you've never been asked to massage anyone's buttocks.
No, I have not.
If you were not specifically asked to massage someone's buttocks, would you?
No.
So as you sit here today, just based on your knowledge of your own history, I understand you're saying you never massaged anyone's buttocks. You've never been asked, so you wouldn't have ever done it.
I wouldn't.
Okay. Similarly, you've never been requested to massage anyone's breast?
No.
And would you ever do that without having been requested?
No, I would never.
So when in the 2015 incidents that occurred at the school, there's at least one incident indicates that you had provided a breast massage, that would have been a false. Is that false?
No, that never happened.
Were you contacted by law enforcement in relation to those incidents?
Yes.
And then there's another incident at a chiropractic facility. Where were you working at that time?
Chiropractic facility? Which would they? City Health.
And were you a massage therapist there?
Yes.
And were you contacted by police related to that incident?
Yes.
What did the facility do with anything related to that?
They offered me to still to work as marketing in the marketing department, but not in the clinic. So I felt shocked for what I was being accused of. So I just told them I'd rather just not work here. So I just left.
So do I understand right? You said that Massage Envy, that there are no, they don't allow any breast massage.
No breast massage.
But food, they would allow with permission?
With permission, but I've never been asked that. I mean, never, yeah. To,
but as far as you know, it's not prohibited, you just wouldn't need to be. But is that
yes.
What about draping technique? What are the policies or procedures there at Massage Envy about draping? Rules,
yeah, there's videos that you take this before you start, and then just you're only allowed to expose the areas you're working on. So that would be just legs, arms or back, whatever the client is requested to get worked on.
The method you just described to the board, I know they'll understand it better than I could, at least the professional members. Is that the Massage Envy method, or is that your preferred method?
That is the Massage Envy method. I only do one leg at a time, but you can do both at other at different locations. Not like Massage Envy, but other types of clinics or where you may have you anything.
And what is your understanding of the purpose? Did they explain to you the purpose of their draping technique?
Yes, to make the client feel comfortable.
Would you agree if I said that Massage Envy draping is more of a conservative, more covered draping than other techniques available?
Yes.
And in terms of your understanding of the board's rules about draping, you understand, would you agree with me that the intention of those is to provide draping that makes the client feel comfortable?
Yes.
Whether or not you think someone's covered, it's about the client. Right?
Well, yeah.
And regarding the incident at the chiropractic facility, was that the incident that there was a civil claim?
Yes.
And you understand that related to the allegation that you engaged in inappropriate conduct of a sexual nature while providing massage?
Yes.
And did you have to pay any of that?
No.
No?
Yeah.
In light of the fact, you already testified that you were contacted by law enforcement on all three people, two separate contacts, I assume, one for the school contact and then the chiropractic contact.
Yeah.
What did you do differently after that in your massage therapy practice, if anything?
Can you repeat that?
Did you change your methods or techniques at all following those three separate contacts or three separate clients complaining and two police contacts?
I always stay to what I was taught in school, just conservative draping, never nothing that would expose anybody at any time.
Okay, so I didn't hear you say, but did you do anything differently than you were doing before those incidents, after those incidents?
No.
And subsequent to having received this complaint, did I understand your testimony that you haven't worked as a massage therapist?
No, I haven't.
Okay. And have you provided anyone massage therapy services or private in-home therapy?
No.
Have you attempted to get employment?
Not as a massage therapist, no.
Why is that?
I just haven't felt comfortable going into massage.
Have you obtained any additional training or have you attained any additional training subsequent to being informed of this complaint?
What does that mean?
What I mean is you've been told that, hey, someone's filed a complaint against you at the massage board. It involves alleged sexual misconduct and poor draping. Have you gone and sought any sort of further education related to those two issues since you found out about the complaint?
Not since I was in Massage Envy, just adding stretches, no.
Have you ever been convicted of any crime?
No.
Have you ever been given any document or told that you've been that the evidence has demonstrated you were innocent of these crimes?
I was innocent?
What I mean to say is we have two different law enforcement contacts related to three different patients. Do you understand? Have you ever been told that you were innocent of those charges? In terms of, there's a difference between not having enough evidence to convict versus the evidence proving your innocence. Were you ever told or given any writing that said the evidence proved you were innocent?
No.
Let me ask you this. Did the victims ever recant their story?
Recant it?
Did they ever say, I take it back, I didn't, nothing happened?
No.
And if I understand right, you just don't have any recollection of this incident, so you couldn't describe to the board anything of what happened in this massage?
No.
But do you have, like, a routine that you would do pretty much every massage where you could somewhat recreate it and say, mm-hmm. this is like my normal massage, this is what would happen?
Or no.
Case by case?
No, it's whatever the client wants at the time.
Okay. But, like, let's say the client just wants a full-body massage.
Okay.
And, you know, they're going to start, I think, AC, you know, if they're going to start face down, or let's just say that, you wouldn't always start from the feet and work your way up, or start from the back and work your way up.
No.
No consistency there. Okay. Do you know anyone in your life that has had any trouble with drugs?
No.
Okay, so you don't have any experience with that personally either, I take it?
No.
Okay. So as you sit here today, wow, strike them. Have you ever had a client request sexual activity from you?
No.
And would you have, you think you'd remember that if it happened?
Yes.
What came, in terms of the school and the complaints that were made at the school, what came of that? Did the school take any action?
Well, I assume that it was stopped because there was instructors involved that were in the clinical rooms. So I'm sure that I think that's why it just ended, because there was always an instructor present during the clinical practicals.
There was always, every time you gave a massage at school,
there's always an instructor present and then watching over us during the practical. The practicals that to do hours for massage.
Okay. So, do you recall these massage? Do you recall those massages that had taken place that resulted in the complaint?
No.
Bear with me. I'm just looking for something in our papers here. Now, I'm looking in Exhibit 3, and it's 1, 2, 3, it's the fourth page, it's called page 4. And here, the officer is describing his contact with you related to the incidents at the school, and what he writes here is that Philip denied all accusations except with the exception of massaging the buttocks. So at least it's reported here. Now, you could have a different recollection, but it's reported here that in your school, massages provided while you were in school, that you did perform massages of the buttocks. Is that, do you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Now, at the time, it appears that you're referring in this quote to the incident
mm-hmm.
reported. It appears you remembered it at the time. But I just had asked you, and you said you didn't really have recollection. Is it that you've kind of, it's been a while, or?
What do you mean?
Was it inaccurate? What I'm, let me rephrase that. What I understand the police officer to be reporting here is that he asked you about the specific massage therapy services provided to a fellow student, and that at the time of this incident, you admitted to knowing about the incident and that you had massaged a buttock.
Can you read it?
Yeah, sure. It says, I advised Philip that I was investigating sexual assault allegations against him by women he was given massages to. I informed Philip that the allegations of him pushing a woman's underwear down and exposing the buttocks, massaging the buttocks, and spreading the buttocks to expose the anus, massaging the breasts and nipples, and pressing his genitals against the back of a woman's back. Philip denied all accusations with the exception of massaging the buttocks. Philip explained that he does massage the gluteus maximus, buttocks, but does not expose the entire buttocks area by using proper draping techniques with a sheet. He does not. Philip stated that he does not massage the buttocks with the person's approval. So I guess the question is this, is that here you're at least reported to have been describing that you do massage the buttocks, you have done it, and that you would do it in a covered way, and that you admitted that you did massage the buttocks of this complainant. As you sit here today, is that still your understanding of your history while at the school, that you did do massage?
So I'm trying to determine what you're saying, because I mean if I am massaging like the glutes, so like it's like through sheets at school, but I haven't done it since school.
Okay, so you would have done it at school, and you would have done it. Is it accurate on this person who had complained, or at least it's reported that you admitted it? Do you remember?
On the person that's at school.
It says Philip denied all accusations with the exception of massaging the buttocks.
No.
Oh, you know what? I'll just drop this line of questioning. It's fine.
Yeah.
So what school was that you were at?
Arizona College.
This one where these complaints arose?
Yeah.
Okay. And where did you eventually graduate?
Cortiva.
Okay. How far along were you in your schooling at the first school before you left?
I don't remember.
How long were you in school total?
Years-wise? It's like an 8-month program. So maybe towards the end.
Well, why did you leave the first school?
Oh, because I couldn't continue there because I fractured my foot. So then I couldn't continue. I would have to wait for the next block to come around to take that class. So I sought out at a different school to continue once my foot healed, I was able to continue at Cortiva and finish off there quicker, and so I could graduate sooner and get my license and start working.
Okay. Did you ever receive any sort of wrap up or conclusion of the schools of these issues that had been raised at the first school?
No.
Like a letter saying these are closed or anything like that?
No. I don't recall.
Correct?
Yes, Your Honor. So, Philip, the state asked you a lot of questions about an incident that occurred in school, and I just want to clarify it. Because prior to this, you didn't have recollection of what happened at the school. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did you have an opportunity to look at the police report right now?
Yes.
So while you were reading the police report, did you understand that there were some classmates making allegations against you?
Yeah.
And during school, did you ever have a practical where they would have you, for instance, not just you, but other students massage the glutes?
Yes.
So would you say that while you were in massage therapy school, you had practicals and you did massage the glutes with consent?
Yes.
Were other people watching just you, or were the instructors watching your other classmates as well?
They were watching all of us. So there's always somebody in center, and then got surrounded by all the classmates.
Okay, so just to clarify, it wasn't just to watch you?
Yeah, no.
Okay. And did you assault your classmates?
No.
Did you assault women?
No.
Did you assault Miss AC?
No.
Have you ever assaulted a client, male or female?
Never.
Have you ever walked in on a client in various stages of undress?
No.
And regarding the allegations with the one that resulted in the civil suit, do you recall me telling you what the detective had stated regarding the investigation on that one?
Yeah.
Do you recall if the detective stated whether or not there was inconsistencies and unreliability of the alleged victim?
Yes.
Do you recall whether or not he decided to close the investigation based on that?
Yes.
Did he close it?
Yeah.
Were you convicted of it?
No.
Were you ever brought to court?
No.
Were you ever in front of a judge or prosecutor?
No.
For any of these cases?
No.
Do you have any sort of registry as a sex offender?
No.
Are you a sex offender?
No.
Thank you. No further questions.
Chairman, if I may, I do have some recross.
Okay.
Very briefly. If I understood the questioning, you were told about the nature of that closing of that investigation by your attorney?
Yeah.
Okay, is that where you get all your information as to what happened in that, the close of that investigation?
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't read the report yourself and see that?
Yeah.
You weren't told by any of the law enforcement about that?
No.
Okay. No other questions.
Okay.
Question. Do you have any?
Well, just a remark. I mean, I am his attorney, and I was his attorney, and not only was I his attorney, but I provided Philip with copies of the declination and copies of the report. So it's not just hearsay at that point. He was there with me.
Any questions?
I have a few. Go ahead, John.
Okay.
Mr. Dominguez, have you ever just sat back and thought why you've had so many complaints against your techniques?
I always think about it all the time. I don't know what they could be taking from what's going on. I mean, what comes to mind is our instructor always told us, it's always what they feel, and always mind your draping. Though that's what I've always done that all the time. I've never deviated from what they taught me. Never go past your own comfortability. And on top of that, I've never gone somewhere like past what I feel comfortable with, and that's never going at least maybe like just a little bit above the knee and massage the rest through draping, through the sheets.
Thank you.
You had one?
Yes. Regarding the chiropractor's office, was the settlement between the chiropractor and the complainant, or was the settlement between Mr. Dominguez and the complainant?
Oh, for me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the settlement was between the city health and the complainant, and it was a nuisance value settlement that was paid out.
Okay. And Mr. Dominguez, when you were in school at Arizona College, the three people that came forward that were uncomfortable with your technique, they were other massage students, is that correct?
I don't remember, but I'm assuming based on what I've gone through.
Okay, so if you're in school learning and there are other students, you're all learning what is appropriate and what isn't.
We're all learning together. Like we're with the instructor, they're with us. So I don't understand how
that many even tables are set up that you're working on people with. How many instructors observing?
So there's one instructor in the classroom, but we're all gathered around one table. So there's one of us will volunteer to get on the table to get worked on, while the rest of the students take notes and watch the instructor work on us, and then the instructor will let the students copy or see what, or let them work it out themselves with everybody watching there. So there's always somebody watching over you. Make sure you don't.
Is it a one-on-one watching over, or is it that there are maybe 10 tables around, 10 massage students practicing, and maybe 10 massage students or instructors on the table, and one person observing?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's gotten bigger now, but when I first started, it was just a few students, so it wasn't where the instructor couldn't keep an eye on all of us.
And how many hours did you complete at Arizona College?
I don't remember how many hours I did there, but I just know once I busted my leg, I couldn't wait to go to circle back around.
Right.
So I saw finished somewhere
else. And did those hours transfer to Cortiva?
Yes.
Yes, they did. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. jumping off her questions.
Rodesky.
Were you a third of the way through, half the way through, two-thirds, three-quarters, approximately?
I was maybe a third. Like, I was maybe almost done. I mean, I had one or two classes left, plus some more hands-on practicals left, and okay. I finished the rest off in Corteva.
But you don't remember, you weren't really told who made the allegations against you?
No.
Okay. I'm going to kind of jump off John's question, too. Have you ever sought counsel? Have you ever sought coaching, therapy, or anything for
that coach
repeats that happen? I mean, this has been going on.
Yeah.
And I know he's talked about reflective time, but have you ever gone to another massage therapist and even just said, hey, you know, what am I doing wrong?
I've talked to instructors at Corteva saying, for Arizona, when it first happened there, I talked to the counsel, my instructors there. And then, going based off of that, I remembered, I wasn't really comfortable going out into working. So I always talked to my instructors as much as possible at Corteva once I was leaving there. Too, and just they demonstrated proper technique, and just they always told me, mind your draping, and never go past your own comfortability with what you're doing. So I've never deviated from that ever. To mine, I can't control what the client feels. So I don't know where they can be getting this way that they feel they're being exposed or what have you. For the life of me, can't put it together.
After the chiropractic one,
mm-hmm.
You know, even though you know it was there was a money settlement. Because you have to take your CEs over the years, right? So you're taking classes, you're getting chances to be in front of other professionals again. You know, have you? What kind of CEs did you take? What kind of continuing education did you take? What classes were you taking for your CEs? Can you give us an example of some of the classes that you've taken for continuing education?
We've done. Well, I just focus more on reflexology, where it's mostly done over clothing, and then going over more draping, like with the instructors. I'm familiar with some of my instructors by Corteva, and once the incident happened in the chiropractic clinic, I went back and they coached me through it, and then saying, you know what, it's not your fault. I mean, it's always different people feel different ways. Just I almost quit like so many times when this past thing happened because I didn't feel like myself anymore. I feel like I came out here on my own to Arizona and focus on school. And I feel like in a second you could lose it just because somebody blames you for no reason. So I've always try to get that through my head, you know. Just don't give up.
Okay. More questions?
No.
Founder, are there any additional respondents or any other witnesses? Anybody?
No, we don't have any.
Okay. State?
No.
Nothing. This concludes the evidentiary portion of the administrative hearing. The board will now hear closing articles. The state may present a closing argument.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the board, you know, it's an interesting case. Normally you have a he said, she said, and here we really do just have a she said, because she's the only one who gave you any detail whatsoever about what she experienced. I'd just note that, you know, a complaint came in within days. As she described it, she got in touch with Massage Envy and the police department. on the Monday following a Saturday massage, and that he was contacted and told, don't come in on the Monday, I think it was, but, you know, basically told, don't come in pretty recent to this event by his employer at Massage Envy. Then there's a police matter that's proceeding. And this isn't his first one, but we'll get to that. But with all that, and then the board's complaint, it seems remarkable to me that he has absolutely no recollection of this incident, that it wouldn't have been somewhat crystallized in his memory, given pretty recent to the actual massage, someone said, you know, you sexually assaulted me in there, and that he wouldn't have committed to memory and gone over it in his own mind so many times trying to figure out why someone could have falsely accused him, that he wouldn't have some recollection about these events, but he says he has none. AC testified very matter-of-factly, you know. It's a hard thing to get up here and testify in front of you and to describe those personal things. And I didn't hear anyone trying to dispute in cross-examination or that the board asked any questions geared towards, you know, disbelief of her testimony. So there being nothing on the other side of it, all you really have is AC's account of the events. And one thing to note is that she didn't know Mr. Dominguez beforehand. There's not any motive that anyone has brought to light for her to make up this story. You know, she's going to a party after this, and she takes the time to immediately post this review, even as she's, you know, got to get herself in a different mindset and go act like everything was normal. Then to file a police report, it goes without saying, you can't lie to the police and make false reports without getting yourself in trouble. Why? And, you know, you'll have some cases that are incidental touching. A lot of times with the breast massage, the technique may have, you know, circled around and maybe perhaps it was intent or not. What she describes is that he repeatedly touched her genitals, stroking them directly. She was wearing underwear, but underneath the sheet. And so it certainly wasn't that sort of incidental contact. As she said, in her history of massage treatment, no one ever got anywhere near that close. And here he is that close and repeatedly touching her. And I would posit that any massage therapist knows the difference between when he's touching someone in their genitals and when he's rubbing their groin or their upper thigh or their glutes. So if she was feeling it, I would have to assume he knew what was happening as well. He says that his draping technique only goes a couple inches above the knee. And, you know, that's just an impossibility for it to have happened in this case if what AC says is true. You can't, and that it's always above the sheet if it's the glutes. And so he would either, you know, have to have really contorted himself, or perhaps this drape was a little higher than he recalls. She felt the breeze. She's an experienced recipient of massage therapy services. She knew immediately this was a little different. And so at least in terms of providing draping that made AC feel comfortable, that's clearly did not occur. But as someone who'd had as many massages as she'd had, that was also just not generally the way it had been done for her. A variety of different massage therapists had never done something to make her feel uncomfortable in that way. Obviously, she'd never experienced this sort of sexual activity. So against her telling of the events and the impact that it had on her, we do have this history of allegations. And we're not here to prove or disprove those allegations, but I think that at least, at the very least, it shows a pattern of massage therapy services that have left people feeling the desire to make a complaint, and maybe a lack of attention to what people are actually feeling or experiencing might at the very minimum be to blame. But again, he says he doesn't really recall much about these incidents, but again, he was contacted by law enforcement while he's in school from multiple people complaining about sexual activity. And again, I just find it hard to believe, or I ask the board to consider the credibility of that, that now, just a couple years later, it's
a mystery.
I have no idea what it was about. I don't know who it was. I never did anything to address it, really. Took classes, changed my ways. He says he's done everything the exact same as he's always done. And he didn't desire to change anything, which is also kind of unique, because I asked him, what have you done differently? And he says, nothing. I said, well, are you able to describe your standard massage? And he says, no, I'm not. I don't even know how he knows if he's done anything different. If he approaches every single massage as though it's his first and he's just going to, you know, go freestyle and make it up as he goes. I've never heard a massage therapist come in and say that's how they operate. But certainly what you didn't hear was him saying, I don't know where they're coming from, but I've sought to figure it out. I've tried to figure it out. If anything, all you have is, I can't remember. I just can't remember. And I just find that remarkable that that's the best explanation you have today from a respondent alleged of a sexual assault. So there really being no evidence other than his just denial about something he says he doesn't even remember, you know, your standard of proof is the preponderance of evidence standard. And against his just flat denial about something he says he doesn't even remember, you have AC's testimony. And I don't understand any reason why you might disbelieve it. Nothing was brought to light that could have possibly made you doubt her testimony. Yes, six years before this incident, she had used drugs and got caught, and she went to treatment. She knew as she sits here today, years later, the very day she got sober, and I know that that's a critical indicator that someone has taken their sobriety seriously. She obviously had inpatient treatment. I mean, this was not someone who, you know, just happened to stop using drugs. She took her life in her own hands and has clearly turned the corner for a long time now. And I just don't understand what relevance the fact that she had used drugs several years earlier would have to her credibility today. If anything, you'd think, you know, someone like that would not want to be involved with law enforcement if they still had some bad feelings about law enforcement or what had occurred to her. And instead, she's, you know, voluntarily gone to law enforcement, put herself at criminal risk if she was telling a lie by filing a false police report. And as you heard from her, she's not about money. I know that insinuation was made, but she didn't contact an attorney and try and file a civil case. That was something that her mother had done for her, just trying to make sure she protects herself and she looks out for herself. She's a social worker or wants to be a social worker, and I would agree with her working for the state as I do and having a mental health professional in the family. That's not the career of people who want to go make a lot of money and who allow money to drive their life decisions. So, you know, that one thing was really the only angle that was played to say that she might not be truthful. And I don't really see any evidence that was presented that you could conclude she's only out here to make money off massage envy. There's no evidence that any civil suit has been filed, or that they've made any demand for money. And so, there being nothing really presented to you to disbelieve her story, there being nothing presented from Mr. Dominguez to provide a different version of the story, I think you really only have one decision, one conclusion you should reach, is that he engaged in the conduct that was charged in the complaint. And that is that he engaged in draping techniques that unnecessarily exposed AC and left her feeling exposed and uncomfortable. And that he massaged her buttocks without any discussion with her in advance, which made her feel uncomfortable. Even if you are allowed to do a massage in that nature, I think it reflects unsafe practice, because you should have that discussion even though you're allowed to massage without getting a written consent. It doesn't mean that it's not unsafe to just start massaging in that area without discussing it. And that, I think, of course, the most damning allegation is that he repeatedly touched AC's vulva and her genitals. And there's really just no reason to touch it more than once by a fluke mistake. I can't imagine any sort of massage technique that would have you repeatedly touching someone's genitals by accident. So there's really only sexual intent that could possibly be the factor for why that would have happened. And so for those reasons, the state asks that you find that it has demonstrated the three simple facts that it alleged in its factual allegations, and that those facts do result in a number of violations. Engaging in an act or practice in violation of your statutes is the catch-all. Under 4253A10, engaging in conduct that could harm the public. Massaging someone's buttocks without having any discussion could harm the public, as it did in this case. Failing to properly drape somebody so that they feel exposed is harmful and was harmful to AC, but it, of course, could harm somebody. That's why you have rules about it. obviously touching someone's genitals during a massage is forbidden, and for good reason. Sexual assault can harm the public and does. Engaging in substandard care, whether or not it results in actual injury to the client. And that kind of goes to this idea that if anyone should have been on guard, it would be someone who's already been 3 times accused of sexual assault. But instead, he hasn't really sought to improve his practice or engage in different techniques, and he can't remember even things that have been brought to his attention within days of the massage and resulted in criminal investigations. He can't really remember the massages. He doesn't really have a massage therapy technique of his own. He just kind of wings it. So I think somewhat there's maybe a hint of negligence in underlying all of this. It's not really caring, not really remembering the massages he's giving, even when there's these big alarm bells that should make them committed to memory. And he hasn't sought any additional training to just be sure he is doing it appropriately. Sexual activity, in addition, is one of the state's allegations. Sexual conduct is any direct or indirect touching, fondling, or manipulating of any part of the genitals. I think the evidence is clear as to that allegation in AC's comments. In addition, sexual activity includes intentionally viewing a partially or fully disrobed massage therapy client in the course of treating if the viewing is not related to treatment under current practice standards and is intended to appeal to the purient interest of the massage therapy. So she described, you know, the breeze that she felt and being exposed. But what she also described is that when she was laying on her back and the massage was over and she sat up, that her underwear had been pulled and pushed into the crease of her vulva where her entire genitals were exposed. So there's no reason that should be that way. And I think given the totality of the circumstances, the only reason that that was not covered and exposed would be to appeal to some sexual interests. Lastly, failing to adhere to the recognized standards and ethics of the massage therapy profession as it relates to your rule that requires massage therapists to only provide massage therapy when it's advantageous to the client and refrain from engaging in any sexual activity and provide draping that ensures the safety, comfort, and privacy of the client. And you know, I think I've gone long enough, but you understand, of course, how the allegations fit those findings. And there's no evidence in the record to really refute them except that Mr. Dominguez just says, I don't remember it, but it didn't happen. Thank you. I talk.
Close.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair. The only thing that the state has demonstrated today is the she said, he said narrative. The state clings to the prior allegations and wants to give them some validity that they do not have. He wants to make it sound as if my client has been prosecuted, convicted, and on the sexual offender registry list. None of that happened. When those allegations occurred in the school environment, there was a professor around. When the other allegations happened with City Health, the prosecution refused to prosecute. The detective decided to close the case. It was unsubstantiated. It was unreliable. No one is going to attack Miss AC's character. We all know she's a good person. She got herself out of drug addiction. She went to rehab. She went to a halfway home. I'm not sure if she's married or not. She's a mother. She's overcome a great deal. She's getting her master's. She wants to help the public. That's great. No one's attacking her. But it's hard to ignore the fact that following this incident, and I understand what Mr. White is saying, and I myself have handled hundreds of sexual assault cases to understand what the victims go through and what their initial response is. However, it's hard to ignore that the initial response was to post a review on Facebook and to then wait and consult an attorney like Mr. Moore. She's an adult. I understand that the state is trying to say, no, this is something that her mother had her do. She doesn't care about money. But when you obtain an attorney like Mr. Moore for the sole reason, what do you think the civil attorney is going to do? They're not there to make sure that justice is served. That's what the prosecutor is for. The prosecutor will ensure that. The state will ensure that. This is a civil action. And everybody has heard over and over again that massage therapy is under attack. How do I know this? How many of their people have I defended? have been falsely accused. We live in a time where there is the Me Too narrative. Believe women first. We look at men and we assume they did it. All that a woman has to do nowadays is come up and say, this happened to me. Believe me. The police is going to write the report. They're going to write the report if I call them and I make an allegation. That's the police officer's job. So yes, a police report was written. That is correct. My client sought not to speak to the police because that's his constitutional right. And at the end of the day, what we have here, sadly, is I don't doubt that Ms. AC had trauma. I believe that she had trauma. What I don't believe is that the trauma that she experienced was with Philip. We can't look at these false allegations in the past and convict or find my client culpable of not doing the proper draping methods, of not caring about his clients. And the state alleges that my client did nothing to correct what was going on. My client voiced the fact that he has been talking to his prior professors, to his mentors, that he's afraid to walk back into a massage room. He's afraid to be a massage therapist nowadays. He's moving away from that. He does not understand. My client retained me out of fear because he doesn't know why this is happening. And he does not want to put the public at risk, just like you don't want to put the public at risk. But at the same time, a false allegation or a baseless allegation cannot be sufficient evidence for you to find in favor of revoking his license. So I ask you that you please look beyond the emotion and trust the evidence of really which there is none, and find that Philip did not violate any code of conduct, any standard of care. Defense rests.
Very briefly, I would just say the idea that there's no evidence on the state's side just is strange when you just heard from AC. Of course there's evidence on the state's side. She just gave you that evidence. And what was on the other side was someone saying, I don't remember it. So the only evidence you have about what happened in that massage therapy room is from AC. And I don't see how you, unless you just disbelieved her, that just someone saying, I didn't do it, would be enough. In a he said, she said case that you're familiar with, and yet you have to make decisions. You can't just treat every single assault case that comes in and say, well, it's he said, she said, so, you know, throw your hands up in the air. You know very well from your history on this board, you have to decide these cases. So the idea that it's a he said, she said is the same pretty much as every single case that's ever going to come before you or has come before you in the past. And many times you've reached a decision that the licensee engaged in the conduct. Sometimes you reach the opposite decision. So you're familiar with it. I know you know how to treat it. Just from an evidentiary standpoint, I'd make the point, there's only evidence on one side of any substantial character. All you have on the other side is him saying, I don't remember it, and I didn't do it. Thank you.
Okay. Having heard the testimony and reviewing the evidence and arguments of the parties, the board will not discuss the case. The board can begin with general discussion or entertain motions. Comments first.
Four complaints.
I do want to remind the board you have three allegations relating to AC only.
But the board can look at past history and make our decisions based on that too. Yes, we can.
He does not have any convictions. I want you to have the full picture.
All it is 51%. This isn't beyond a reasonable doubt.
My concern is, after listening to all this, is that I truly do believe that it is he said, she said. That both believe, and I believe both are right. The problem is that, as Mr. Dominguez said, it's how the other people have felt. And that's my concern, is that this is, that in the sense of the repetitive, is that it keeps repeating. I condone him in the sense that he hasn't started back, because I think that's been the most reasonable thing that he's done. and that's my opinion, that reasonableness is that I don't believe he understands what's happening, because I do believe that they're truly feeling it. But I also believe that there's an ignorance and or something that's happening that is creating this. And so, you know, I see that you've done it, but I don't feel you've done enough. Does that make sense? I don't feel you've done enough to figure out why does this keep happening. And it's come to this point that either it's sloppy techniques, it's lack of motivation, or it's just being at a job that maybe just brings in money and you're not doing what you need to do. Care. There's not enough care there. However, I believe, like you said, it's I believe something happened, but so that's where I stand. I don't know where you guys.
The preponderance of evidence, in my opinion, something happened. Mm-hmm. And while the case in front of us is AC, there's certainly sufficient information in our exhibits that lend itself to a pattern. And
can I jump on that?
Sure.
So the question is we're here to protect the public. I feel that if we allow this gentleman to go on, is he safe for the public? And that's my concern. My only holdback to that is the fact that he has quit and said, I don't feel comfortable touching. That's the only thing that I've really felt has been comfortable with it, because he's now starting to recognize that he's not safe for the public. And I don't feel, because up to that point, until he said that, I didn't feel he was safe for the public.
Do we accept 1 through 6?
First you need to do the
factual allegations.
1 through 3.
That's right. So,
John Ortega, I move that we accept the factual allegations 1 through 3 on case.
So do we accept, and I'm not out of motion, am I out of?
You just need to decide out of your factual allegations what you want to become your findings of fact.
Yeah. So you're saying you don't believe that there was sexual intent, or you do?
I think his motion is to adopt the factual allegations 1 through 3. Is that correct?
Only 1 through 3, though. That's my point.
Well, that's all there is. 1 through 3.
There's only 3 in the factual allegations.
Oh, factual allegation. I'm sorry, I was
not
looking at the wrong one. So that was my point. Okay, thank you.
I second it.
The motion is to adopt factual allegations 1 through 3 as the findings of fact.
And she just seconded it. Right. We need a roll call?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? So we do accept the factual allegations. Thank you. So factual violations.
Go through them one at a time, or?
Yeah, let's go through one at a time, if you don't mind.
Number one.
I agree with it.
two?
Yes.
Okay. Number three?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got one through three. Four. Because above.
Yes.
My only interest in that, and then it would be to discuss it with you two, would be is I'm not sure if it was, I believe it's going on.
I don't know if it was
intentional or sloppy.
But I think the wording of this is, I've always not liked the wording of this either. But I think just the fact that
it happened,
the genitalia was touched, makes it sexual.
Okay.
I know, because this always makes it seem like there was some kind of Puritan interest. And maybe sometimes, maybe it wasn't, maybe there was, I don't know. But.
Well, it says and or.
Casey also mentioned that it happened both face down and face up.
Okay.
And that's too much for oops.
So you believe?
I agree with four.
Agree?
Okay. So four will take. I know. Four, two. Five.
Yes.
I say yes. And six.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So I have a motion to accept all six alleged.
I move that the board, Victoria Bowman, I move that the board finds the state is. Right one. Two, okay. I move that the board finds that the finding of fact constitutes a violation of the statute and or rules set forth in the complaint and adopt the alleged violations 1 through 6 as the conclusions of law.
John Ortega, I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, so that's factual allegations.
That was the conclusions of law.
Right.
Okay.
So that becomes your violation, and now you need to decide the sanction. You're on page six, number
page
number C.
Six
of the script.
Three. Final issue is discussion of the board's order.
Victoria Bowman, I move the board revoke the license.
John Ortega, I second.
Roll call for that.
Victoria Bowman, aye.
John Ortega, yes.
Earl Dusky, aye. From
read the
okay.
Thing.
This concludes the formal hearing. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained on the board's order. This concludes this matter. Thank you for attending today. Okay, moving forward. This is Mr. Dusky, and we are going to change the order really quick. We're going to go to 6D, number 1, Kristen Duncan. Is she present? Not present. Okay. So, Mr. White.
Mr. Duncan had an application with the board, and he had a pending case for theft and unlawful use of work. He had a pending case at residence in Richmond in 2018 for theft and unlawful use of food stamps. We know the arrest happened some time ago, but they finally came to a head this year. one case on theft happened. The classic designated felony between December 14th and December 31st, and then the unlawful use of food of 2015. The unlawful use of food stamps happened between January 1st and December 1st of 2015. The conviction didn't happen until June 26, 2018.
And she, Ms. Duncan is not here. Mr. Chair, I indicated I wanted to give you some quick feedback on that matter, just to remind you. And if we need to go into executive session, we can. But your statute 3242.22 is your application qualifications for a licensure statute, and it says that you cannot, within 5 years preceding the date of application, have been convicted of a class 4, 5, or 6 felony, which that applies. You have class 6 felonies, two of them within 5 years, involving moral turpitude. So generally theft and fraud would potentially fall into that category. So we could set that aside as essentially satisfied, but that also has a reasonable relationship to the practice of massage therapy. So even if it meets the other requirements, the statute does require that you consider whether the offense has a reasonable relationship to the practice. I had anticipated they'd be here and you could talk to them and learn more about the offense and see how it might relate to massage therapy, but without the applicant here, you can just try and base that the best you can on the record or consider tabling it and inviting her in for a one-on-one discussion.
Do we have any communication from?
They have responded to me. Have you responded to it?
No.
Emailed the things in
and our
application and
everything. Is she local? I mean,
I'm not. She's in Paulden.
Somewhere.
Paulden, Arizona. It's west of 863.
So that's
about like that
somewhere. Okay. So that's part of the reason that we might work. Okay.
I know she did check the box on her application. I mean, she did disclose. There was a little bit of confusion there, but she had checked a box and disclosed. She checked no on one, but yes on the other, and did bring it to the board's attention.
So
just, you know, just to reiterate, I think you need to conclude, no matter what, if you're going to deny someone on the criminal element, that these crimes have a reasonable relationship to the practice of massage therapy, and the crimes are theft and fraud related. But you may need to speak with the applicant to know more. We don't have the underlying police reports,
right?
Yeah.
Can we table this till we get the reports, in case she doesn't want to, in case she doesn't come in?
I mean, you have licensing time frames that you need to comply with eventually, but that doesn't mean you can't exceed them. The remedy is that you might have to waive the fee, and eventually someone can compel you to take action, but I don't think you're in that. This would be the first time you've tabled it, so it's like this is an old case or anything. So the short answer is yes, you can table it.
So if we take, well, or if we asked her to.
Right.
At least even telephonically.
Right. Yeah.
She lives far away.
I move that we table this to the next meeting and request her either attend by person or telephonically.
John Ortega, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed.
Okay.
Thank you for taking that out of order.
Thank you.
Okay.
Now we are at number 6B, number 1, file number 19-145, Christopher Kamei.
He's not present.
Okay.
But after the investigative review, he was notified that he wanted a formal interview. So he didn't show up today, and for counsel, we have to move to a formal hearing.
Okay, so move it to a formal hearing.
So,
you'd have other options, but assuming you want to proceed, not appearing is tantamount to denying for a formal interview, even though you might have indicated otherwise. You can't proceed without him. In this, you'd go to a formal hearing where you can proceed without someone present.
Okay. We have a motion?
So I'm not quite sure what we're doing here.
You need to either, I mean, I just throw it out there that conceivably you could choose to dismiss the case at any time you want to, but assuming you still want to investigate it, the next option would be to go to the formal hearing.
And that's what he wants, a formal
hearing? Then it can be.
Well, I think you have to imply that he's declined the request for formal interview because he's not here, even though he had accepted it. You can't proceed with a formal interview without him present.
However, yeah, but a formal
particularly, you could table it, see if he wants to, and he just had something flukish happen and he couldn't appear. But you certainly can't proceed and conduct a formal interview in the past. So you could either try and see if there's a chance of a formal interview in a future meeting, but if not, then you're back to where you are today, or you could go to formal hearing.
So if we take it to formal hearing and he doesn't show up, what do we do?
Then it's your normal, I mean, we'll have a complaint, and then he'll have to answer. If he doesn't, then there would be the deem process. If he does answer and we go to the hearing and he doesn't appear, you could still proceed in advance.
I move that we move this to a formal hearing at our next meeting.
John Ortega, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Board 6C, number 1, 19-156, Jane Wolgan. Come on up. Okay. Help me out with this one.
If the complaint is here.
Mr. White?
We see a complaint for Ms. Jane Wogan for unprofessionalism and improper breaking and providing a service not asked for.
Okay.
I understand.
Is the complainant here, too?
No, he's not here. He's not going to be here.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Wogan, would you like to give us a brief?
I don't know who the complaint is, or I really don't understand and everything. So I don't know what kind of statement I can make because I am professional and am at work at all times.
Okay.
And feel free to ask me to repeat. I am a speech impediment, and if you didn't understand, I do apologize.
You can ask her if she knows the client, though. Does she know who the client is?
No, she's basically saying she doesn't
know. I don't know who the client is or who's accusing me.
And the initials JF don't help.
J-Farnforth?
Well, we don't use any of the names, but the initials of the complainant are JF.
That's the only person that I would think of would complain.
And the
those initials.
So is it? We can just talk, right? Okay. So is it common for you to? I mean, because the complaint was that
climbed
onto his back.
I do a table stretch where you do go get on the fire on the table, but I never do it without permission.
The candlestick.
Did you say table stretch or counter stretch?
Table stretch.
That's a table stretch.
Would you explain how you do it?
Basically, of course, client and drape, which the sheet is on top of them. I would, of course, palpate to make sure, muscles and whatnot. Hands here, knees and glutes here. So. And then just basically, and I would cross-stretch to get into the muscles a little bit deeper.
And your reason for being on the table is?
with when I first worked on the client, I wore pal pain at that. And with being on cable, it again, like I said, it helps get into the muscle a little bit deeper, helps them to release. So basically, I'm not going full in with like elbow or arm. I'm always helping. I'm always saying, "Hey, I'm here."
And you said when you do this that you always
ask permission.
Ask permission. And how would you say that? If you were working on me, how would you say that?
Are you okay with me being on the table?
Oh, okay. And why would you do, you know, now I'm still on the table. And why are you going to do that?
After assessing your muscles, you seem really, really, really tight. So I believe instead of me going in full arm or elbow, me down the table would definitely decompress, and that would help release the tension that you have. A little bit faster instead of me just going pounding. And,
So you do this regularly?
Only, again, on permission, and if I feel that the client doesn't need it.
So in a given week, how many of these do you do, Mom?
Depending on the deep tissue, if it is deep tissue, they're one deep tissue, and they are okay with it. I may, again, I can't really say within a week, because I do it periodically. I don't do it all the time.
Okay, but say in a month. I'm just trying to get a general idea of how often. Or what's the percentage of massages that
I believe there's only about 2 or 3 clients that I at least do with people with. I don't do it with every client.
What would be one of the conditions that you would do this for?
Again, if they're like one really, really deep tissue, and again, and like saying they do feel the stiff of the board. That, again, it's only by permission. I don't just hop on the client and say, "Hey, here I'm at, here I am," kind of thing. That definitely not a compliment.
Because it helps. There's also an allegation of a food massage without permission or discussion and drinking.
Okay. Do you get permission for glutes?
No, not really. If I see that a client is wearing garments, I don't drink the glutes. But if I see if they are, but again, if they tell me to stop, I stop, I drink, I move on. No one has ever said, unless it's on their paperwork saying do not work on this area, I believe on him, I don't have his form with me because the company would only let me bring the soap notes that when I worked on the person, but they have it marked work on everything. I definitely can say that for fact. And I only have the subject from here if you want to see it.
Do you remember somebody saying, what are you doing?
No, never.
Do you guys want to see it real quick? Or
we have... She's got soap notes. Oh, here it is. These are all.
What was the date of this one, Mr. Wade?
30th.
July 30th.
So that should be this one. Yeah.
When you do deep tissue, do you normally do two-hour sessions?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Did you read that last line? Last couple of lines.
How do you document when you are on the table?
Table stretch.
I think she wants to play.
Huh? Not yet. Let me be blunt from your soap notes. Was he being?
Yes.
Okay.
Very inappropriate. He would hop the table. He would move the drink to mid glute, and I would move that every time.
Yeah. Victoria Bowman, I move that we dismiss this case.
John Ortega, I second.
Do we need a roll call?
Yes.
Victoria Bowman, aye.
John Ortega, yes.
Earl Dusky, aye.
We dismiss.
Thank you for taking soap notes.
So Gabriel, huh?
Where's my paper?
9163.
Okay. 19163. Gabriel Housel.
See the complaint from the individual with expenses of therapy, and this happened on 1-28-2017. Professional on both occasions committed sexual assault on the side and sexual threats without prior oral and written permission.
Is the complainant here? Okay. Would you like to give us an overview on that?
What do you mean?
basically tell us your side of the story without going into it's not a, this isn't a, the time for the place, but tell us why we shouldn't or why we should move it forward. So,
to be completely honest, I have no memory whatsoever of this person or those sessions. I don't have a name or a face. This was 3 years ago at a job I don't work at anymore. So, I literally don't know. But if I did something to upset this client, I'm very sorry, but I assure you it wasn't intentional. I can only assume that she had a problem with pectoral work I did, which I sometimes do, and I always ask permission first to do that. But the thing is, because I can't say anything specifically about what happened because I don't remember, I just have to go by the information I can figure out. And the big issue for me is that she came back and saw me again after this. So if it was one complaint, I can admit I must have made a mistake, you know, and I didn't mean to, but I'm sorry. But for her to come back and see me a second time raises a lot of really big questions. If she was, you know, so offended by whatever I did, why did she come back and see me again? There's also the fact that because I supposedly did the same thing twice, she must have asked me to do the same thing I did last time. There's also the fact that I can't see the record, so I don't have proof, but there's a very good chance she requested me on the second occasion, because there's, at any given time at that massage envy, there's 10 therapists on the schedule. So for her to call a second time and just randomly happen to get me is highly unlikely. Probably requested me, and even if she didn't, even if she was, it was just pure chance that she got me the second time, they still would have told her on the phone when she booked the appointment that I would be who she was with again. So it means no matter what, she knew the second time around that it would be me, and she could have completely avoided me without confronting me in any way. I'm just saying, no thanks, give me a different therapist.
But are you still practicing?
Yes.
Okay.
The thing is, I really, really just wish that whatever happened, whatever I may have done, that she had just told me something was wrong. If she had just told me in any way, let me know in any capacity, that she wasn't happy with what I was doing, I would have stopped immediately and apologized, and none of this would have happened. So I really just wish she had said something and let me know. And even right now, if she would just talk to me, that, you know, I'd much rather just do that than have to be here.
How long have you been working as a therapist?
Right about 6 years.
So you've been working 6 years. This is the only complaint you've had?
No.
No?
You had one before.
But was it from the same woman? No. So he does have another complaint.
But we put him on probation and 15 CEs.
Okay. I missed that.
That was about 4 years ago. And I admit, that time, back then, I was inexperienced professionally and socially, and I made a mistake, and I took responsibility for it, and, you know, that's all I can say with that. I was sorry, and you guys listened to me then, and I, you know, greatly appreciate that, and I'm asking you to listen to me this time. Like, I try really, really hard to be as professional and non-threatening as I can possibly be, but I'm not perfect. This issue was almost 3 years ago, and I haven't had a single complaint since from anyone. Again, if this was one time, I could just, I, must have done something wrong, and I didn't mean to, and I'm sorry. But the fact that she came back and repeatedly saw me and didn't complain any of those times and ordered my boss or the internet or anything.
Please complain. Please complain. Say that she came back for a second time and I had a regular therapist not available, and the front desk assigned him to her.
Yeah,
so she didn't request that.
Right.
That's what the complaint says, yeah. So this prior complaint took place in what year?
16.
So both of these complaints took place in 16.
No, one is in 17, isn't it?
No, no. It was November 14th, 2016.
Oh, and then...
Oh, and then on January 28th, 2007.
So this is 2 years old? This complaint is 2 years old?
So both original complaints were in 16, correct?
Well...
Wait, what?
Well, there were complaints against
January
you should
17.
Know when they were.
January 28th, 2006, she returned.
No, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about the first complaint.
Okay.
It doesn't have a date on it.
Oh, the first time? That was a different 14th, lady?
2016.
That was
16.
No, that was the one where I've been.
That's the case we're talking about now.
His original. He's been before us before.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I'm asking him about what the date was when he was in.
I believe it was 2014.
2014.
Right.
First, I believe that was around September, I think.
Thank you. So your first one was 14, and 16, 17.
It kind of bothers me that it took 2 years to file this complaint.
Thank you, Mr. White.
Okay. Well, she also states that the first time she thought maybe it was just a mistake, and when she had him the second time, she said it didn't feel like it was.
So 15, 16,
17. Was he in a violation, bro? Not in the probation period or anything. It's just outside of it.
Yeah, because he was 1 year of probation.
Right.
And 15 hours of continuing education.
Mm-hmm. So November 16 puts him just 2 months past his probation. But this complaint is still now. So...
It's 2 years and
I mean, that's when
4 months.
Yeah. So move it forward and get more information.
What do you think, a formal interview or?
Would she come forward if we did? She would come forward. So if we did a formal, did you just want a formal interview? Or do you want to go to a full formal hearing?
I have no problem with an interview or a hearing.
Vicky's thinking. I'm like John, though. I actually lean more towards a hearing. Whatever going to hear.
Or even an interview.
She'll be here either way.
Well, I know, but... Reservations? time limit?
You know, yeah, the 2+ years, you know, it bothers me.
Well, that's why I think it would be worthy to take it forward. That way we can hear from her.
Sure, I'd like to hear from her.
Okay.
Interview?
Interview.
Hearing.
Interview.
Okay. So you guys both.
I move we take this case, file 19-163, Gabriel Housel, to formal interview.
John Ortega, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? You'll be told. It'll basically be a
interview. Formal interview.
Interview. So.
When's that?
You will be contacted.
When they get all their paperwork together and everything, they'll notify you of that. So make sure you. We have current address on him, right? Everything's current in the system.
My address needs to be updated.
Probably not all the email coming back to
us. Your information isn't current?
My address needs to be updated.
Okay.
You have 10 days to update it.
Well, and actually that needs to be...
Yeah, it will. When you move, you need to let us know within 10 days.
Yeah. So they'll let you know. So make sure that we have your current stuff. Okay? Thank you. So we are at proposed 2020 board legislative package, board to continue to potential proposed changes in statutes in a submission of the 22nd regular session of the 54th Fifth Arizona. Are we going to hear from...
Mr. Chairman, let me, if we can, first start with April, just to give a reminder of what was done at the last meeting, and then we've asked, staff has met twice with Mr. Harris before today's board meeting, and we asked him to be here, and we thought his comments would be particularly useful, but can we just do maybe a primer as a reminder of what we did at the last meeting, and then ask Mr. Harris to speak, and then get into a full-blown discussion.
Okay.
With your permission.
Yeah.
Can I get some clarification on that? You want me to do a rundown or just...
Just, I think, revisit with the board what we did last time. This was on your last agenda, and we basically did a very quick overview at the last meeting of what the special committee had come up with, of which you, Mr. Chairman, were a member on that committee. And the pleasure of the board last time was to table this until today's day because there was so much work last time, and then to also offer people a chance to kind of go through the work of the committee from last year in more detail before today's discussion. Ms. Romero did proceed through, anyway, kind of a rundown of what principal findings had been recommended by the committee to the full board. And I don't think we need to necessarily repeat that, but if there's anything worth offering as a primer before we start, that's what I wanted to suggest. Well, let me help out. I didn't want to throw her to the wolves here. Basically, the committee came up with a multi-page document which had a number of specific particulars in it, of which you have had a copy in the last board packet and this board's packet. And what I think would be useful today would be, and as a chairman, I certainly would defer to you since you were here and I was not here, but you could lead what you thought the mandate of that committee was and what some of the findings were that it came up with. Because there are, basically you were to ask what it is, under 60 seconds the answer would be there is statutory cleanup and conformity, there are some new definitions which do not currently exist in statute, and there are some other policy adjustments. I think what Mr. Harris is going to be talking with you about today is what has been happening legislatively during this 2019 session across the street, and what action has already been taken and signed by the governor that may actually impact on what you, the board, wants to do in the 2020 session, and whether there may be, I don't want to steal his opening act here, but there may be, which I've already done, there may be some connections that you'll want to do statutorily in response to what the legislature has done this year. And then Mr. Harris is really able to give a unique overview of the legislative climate across the street, which I think most of you are aware has had a significant impact on the regulatory climate in Arizona this year. I think no shorter than 22 or 23 bills, of which many have already gone through the process, and some of which have already been signed by the governor. So basically you have two things converging. You have the work of your committee last year, which went through and did statutory review, did proposed cleanup, and then you had some things that you felt were missing in statute, which the committee put forward as a recommendation. And that's the document you have today. And you may have things in there that you want to include in a packet in 2020, or you may have things that you don't want to put forward at this time. Or following Mr. Harris's testimony, you may find that whatever you do legislatively is actually going to be predicated on taking existing statutory authority and maybe perhaps making it responsive to what has happened this legislative session. So that's, like I said, I didn't mean to put April up against a blank screen, but I was just trying to remind people of what was done in the summer of 2018, and then at the last meeting, and then Mr. Harris can give you some details as well. So,
okay. Did you want me to go over the quick review?
Well, to the extent that since you served on the committee, if you, I know it's kind of a conflicting role if you'd be the chair and also speak for the committee, but I think what would be helpful would be for you to talk about how the committee was formed, what the intent of the committee was, what findings maybe that came from the committee that you thought might be of interest to the other board members, that type of thing, just kind of the genesis of the committee. And
generally, the board came together. I mean, we came together to try to get a wide variety of who would be on it. So we took somebody from the schools, one person from the schools. We took one person from the board. I was there. From the organizations, from the representatives, and we started talking about what were some of the things that needed to be changed and why. You know, and that was the big key thing is why. So some of the things that were talked about were the hours. So to make them 700 was, I think, in my opinion, an overwhelming majority would rather see it at 700. You know, but right now it currently sits at 500 plus 200 for rules, but to make it legislative, that was one of them. But the problem was whether it would pass or not, you know, whether we were going to do it. So there was one person who was actually trying to go down, but then make other rules in it. The one that went across really well was that, you know, that the national test be part of everybody. That way there's a lot of reciprocity, you know, going across from state to state, and we have people coming out of this state who can't go to another state because now it's 6 years they've been a therapist, and they don't remember a lot of the anatomical names, or, you know, that wasn't their specialty. They just did Swedish. They didn't, you know, they don't worry about that. So, you know, the CE requirements, but the CE requirements, the nice thing about the CE requirements is now they're much more explanatory. There's six for this, six for this, six for that, you know, even though it brought them down, and they're more congruent with what's across the country. So, you know, but we're specifically, six are going to be in ethics, six are going to be in the practice of massage therapy, which means it has to be pretty much, you know, it can't be foo-foo, you know, for lack of it. But the other can be in personal development or something that's a little bit more widely accepted. So they can still take some of that, some of those submodalities that aren't, you know, necessarily a massage. Some of the wording, like right now, the way the past wording has been, the FSMTB doesn't have as much of a role, and the NCB, who doesn't actually do national testing, is who we're supposed to go through. I mean, so we need to word it in a way. It needs to be worded in a way that, you know, the current organization. So if one of them fails, like they did, we still have something that we can do, and that we don't have to, you know, that we can work with a national board. I don't know what else. The TOEFL, the conglomeration was the biggest was is that we don't need the English speaking. There was some fight for a minimalist of it, and then there was some that just basically said it was unnecessary, you know, for us at this time. Trying to think of some of the other issues. Draping was more specifically, relationships was more specifically held in there, breast massage was more clearly defined, and things like that. So I think that's an overview. Anything we want to go from there? Or any reminders?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought that would be helpful to those in attendance and for the record as well. And Mr. Harris is here to talk about both the current package and the current legislative session and so forth. So.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Greg Harris from Lewis Roper Rockover Post on behalf of the association. You know Garnet Adair and T. Wills also from the association, so it's a pleasure to be here this morning, or I guess this afternoon. So I've been working with the association for a long time. We, our firm, did the work with the association when the measure first went through the legislature through the Sunrise process. So we've had a lot of experience about messaging with policymakers about how to advance the professional goals of the massage profession, and then also to make sure that the board, or try to work with the board to make sure that you've got the resources necessary to get the job done. So we met last year. We were glad to be a part of that process, and as we've watched what's gone on across the street, the legislature's still in session, we've kind of tried to take stock with you about not only what needs to be done, but what can be done. And I think what we distilled it to as a result of the recent meetings that we've had is two things. One, last year when Representative Carter introduced the bill, or was the spearhead behind a bill to revamp the reciprocity provisions that were in the code, we made some changes, but because of the passage of House Bill 2569 this year, we're going to have to make more changes. So we think that working together on the massage statutes to revamp your statutes to align with what was in House Bill 2569 is one fix. I think another fix, and why the legislature was willing 20 years ago, roughly, to embark upon this system to have statewide regulation for massage, was the concern that members of the public, members of the profession, and the community as a whole needs protection from those who would use the massage banner to engage in behaviors that the Act pretty well prescribes, but maybe could be more clear about what's permitted and what's not permitted. And so we identified a series of issues that we would like to work with you to strengthen the code to make clear for all, right, not just for the practitioners who need help, but also for those who look to do business with massage therapists, that when they're coming for a massage, that's what they're coming for, and if they're looking for something else, they're in the wrong spot. And so we can use the code really to help drive that measure and to help people to understand that this is an honorable profession. It is a lawful business, and it is not one that, as your practice today shows, it's not one that folks should believe that it gives them a license to do things that the law doesn't permit. And so we want to work with you to support that. And so those are the two things that we would like to work with you over the coming year, and to work with legislators across the street to find support for it and try to move that through, all consistent with the agenda, the regulatory agenda that the governor and the legislature have set for the regulated professions, to be focused on what can be done in order to advance the effort. So I don't know, Garnet, if you had anything further to add about that. We really appreciate the chance to work with you, Tom, April, with you, Mr. Chair, on this effort over the last year.
So what did you have more? Do you want to?
I'm happy to answer any questions that you have, but I think those are the items that we thought, especially with the legislature about to wrap up this year and us looking forward to the coming year, working on a program where we might together think about how to better use the resources that we have available to educate the legislature, members of the legislature, about the work of massage therapists in the state, about the important work that this board does. So as we go into next legislative session and we are looking at this effort to strengthen the code that the legislature, the governor's office, members of the public have a better and clearer understanding about what you do, about what members of the profession do. So when we ask them to vote on a bill, they understand exactly what it is that they're voting on.
So, and I think the association is probably in agreement, but 700 hours being a minimum for, what is the climate for changing that legislatively instead of just having it through rules?
Mr. Chair, I think the climate is that, one, the association definitely supports the 700-hour requirement, and we've been quite clear, and we're pleased to work with board and board staff last year when you submitted the report to the legislature. In terms of an environment, we feel comfortable with the proposals that we've made and are less comfortable about pursuing other more aggressive agenda items at the legislature. We think that these goals that we've set out are doable, and that's why we've proposed the ones that I've laid out.
Yeah, basically, the 500 in the statutes and the 200 goes up to 200 more via rules.
So you feel that's the way we're going to hold it for right now?
Mr. Chair, the strategy to codify the rule is one that I'm having a hard time figuring out how to get that through the legislature.
Okay.
And right now you've got a rule that's enforceable. And so we're comfortable with the current framework.
Just to let you know, in following Mr. Harris's lead, staff is actually leaning heavily towards not submitting an omnibus bill, but just rather start small, and then, as Mr. Harris suggests, to start to educate legislature about the massage board and why these changes, these other changes in our proposed packet today, are so important to us and why they're necessary. Because right now it just looks like we're just trying to, you know, throw some changes out there, and without that education they might not understand the importance of it. So right now staff is actually just leaning towards pulling this back. I mean, we have a huge packet in front of you in the board packet, but we are leaning towards just starting small with a much smaller package for this coming session.
Okay.
That would be my recommendation.
So same strategy for the national test?
Yes, Mr. Chair, absolutely. I think the question, right, as we've looked at what the national test, what the statute looks like, I think any strategy to change that would run into difficulties at the legislature. So we feel that better to keep the status quo than to make an effort at returning the law to the way it was when it was originally adopted. We don't see that it's going to be an easy effort or a successful effort at the legislature. So rather than make the change that I think you're asking about, try to make that change and fail, we think that the status quo is preferable.
Well, I guess my question is status quo is what's preferable, why are we doing this? It seems like an exercise in futility.
Well, what the discussions between Mr. Harris and staff have indicated is that rather than, as and April alluded to as well, rather than doing just a plain omnibus bill that has a number of pages and statutory changes and conformities and so forth, which in ordinary times would probably be something that would be routine. And Ledge Council would go through it, and the House and Senate staffs would go through it. In the current environment across the street, there's a tremendous focus on the economy and promoting business and lowering unnecessary government regulation and so forth. And in fact, here's a translation of what Greg is saying, and what I'm going to try to say is that having a vehicle that improves on the reciprocity to make it specific to this industry, piggybacking on what the legislature just approved and the governor signed, would be of potential support across the street. But more importantly, it would begin a dialogue among the 90 and their staffs about what the industry is currently doing, both from the private sector, trade association, and licensee standpoint, and the regulatory community as well, and maybe build a relationship of communication and trust on statutory changes which are maybe minor in impact, but appreciated in being offered, because it's consistent with the theme of what they've been focusing on so much across the street. And then maybe in ensuing sessions, getting back to the boilerplate changes of statutory constructs and things like that. But I don't know that in the second session of this current legislature there is the interest or the patience to go through a multi-page document for the purpose of doing primarily statutory changes. And on the issue of hours, it's something that probably needs more lead time to speak with the 90 about first before a bill shows up in 5 months. As with any legislative session, it's like a sporting event. You have an offense and you have a defense. When you introduce legislation, I don't want to use the example of a wound, an opportunistic infection, but I've already done it. And when you have a bill, it serves as a moving vehicle through both chambers and the roughly 5 month session. And strike everything as a concept which serves the person with the most votes the best. So you could introduce a bill on something very benign dealing with the industry, and it could be modified and amended very late in the session on something that the industry would not have had time to vet or even discuss. Therefore, it would not be in support. In fact, it could be anathema. And because the vehicle is that far down the line, you don't really have much recourse at that point. Now, the risk is still there with a bill that deals with the issue of reciprocity, although it would be more limited to the titles of the ARS that you're opening up. But it still is a vehicle. And, in fact, if you duplicate the bill in both the House and the Senate, which I think there's some wisdom in doing that, you have to stay vigilant as that bill goes through the hearing process. Usually they're on subcommittee hearings. And I don't think there'd be any fiscal impact, so it probably would not go through probes. But you have to stay vigilant all the way through with staff and members, because there may be some other issues. I mean, how often have you seen a news headline in mid-session take a bill and completely do a strike everything after the initial language and turn it into something else? So it's always it's alive, but a set of session is like, you know, having a kid in the next room under the age of 6 months on a baby monitor. You're listening and worrying all the time until the parents come and pick up the baby. And the session is very similar. You have to be on the offense in terms of articulating what changes you think should be done. And you can communicate challenges to the industry during that time, and certainly should. But the defense is just as important to, hopefully, if somebody wanted your bill for a vehicle or wanted to graft an amendment onto it, it would come to the trade association or to the regulatory committee to discuss it first. I mean, what Gray won't say, but what probably would like to say, is that, I mean, actually having no legislation is the most assured policy to not having unexpected results, although you still have to read all bills that are introduced. Roughly 1,400 bills get introduced every year. The passage rate is one in every three, becomes a new law. I don't know that massage is of tremendous legislative interest across the street, but regulatory efficiency and fairness in Arizona is a current theme. And people want, lawmakers want the opportunity, and the governor has made it a priority, to rhetorically discuss what is it we're doing with taxpayer money that adequately represents an industry without being punitive to the public at large and to other practitioners as well. So every session kind of has a theme or a flavor, and I think in the current state legislature with a robust economy and discussion on rainy day funds and so forth, they're not looking for more government. They're looking for more efficiency, and they're looking for more clear proof of regulatory necessity. I think that's... So if you want to enter the arena under those standards of performance, then it might be wise to do technical changes for demonstrable results and less statutory change to have consistency in language, which a lot of that bill, you know, does have. I'm not certainly not trying to say like the summer effort was not time well spent, because you bonded, you had fellowship, and you read statutes in minute detail. And actually, it is a roadmap for the future, because the statutes do have a number of areas that need remediation by the 90 across the street.
Right. There are several things that need to be changed in there. The FSMPB, different certifications, you know, because right now it limits who can actually get CEs. You know, there's that opportunity with the FSMPB, you know, looking at certifying, and that'll give other people opportunity if they choose to only go through that process. So right now we can't accept them as CEs,
right,
even though they're a national organization, and you know, so we want to make it open that, you know, reputable organizations can be accepted. So,
you know, another method for maybe having the discussion would be to have
That would actually be a rule change, because right now for accepting CEs are...
That's just a rule?
Yeah, our measures are written in rules, so that would be a rule change to start opening it up to FSMPB. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, you're free, obviously, as the board, to recommend amendments to the bill, really up until through the whole process. I mean, we will tell the governor's office first of what draft legislation that you all approve this summer, and then the folders would be open in the legislative council, but only with the permission of a sponsoring entity for that. And then once the folders are done, they're returned to the sponsor of the folders, and then they have to be given to majority members in both chambers for sponsorship, and or minority members to do co-sponsorship. So you could even, conceivably, the 2020 session test the waters on a specific issue by an amendment to your own bill if there is any evidence of support in the majority caucus, preferably first, perhaps, or both caucuses if that were magically possible. So that's another option you can do, because there may be things that develop nationally that you will not want to wait to the 2021 session, and you could do a trial balloon with an amendment to your own bill. Members. So I'm not trying to shut out further discussion on a policy basis by the board or certainly the industry, but if you're looking for probably the most attractive vehicle to show up in the bill hoppers the first day of session, it's going to be doing something that is enhancing what they've just done with reciprocity and what the governor's office has just been done to sign that. It looks like, it'd be innovative, and I think it would be welcomed, and it actually has a practical benefit. So it might not be a bad place for a starting dialogue on statutory issues of the Bassange Board.
So reciprocity goes both ways, though, right?
Under the current bill that's just passed, you're asking, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. But reciprocity goes both ways, right? Because
The way the bill was introduced, Arizona is offering reciprocity without necessarily having that exchange or that return. They've made a policy statement to offer it to all 50. In some cases, there will be, but in certain cases right now, there is not currently reciprocity. So it's a doctrine approved by the legislature and signed by the governor.
So, yeah, and so my point is, and I know it doesn't enhance our state if people want to move out, but that's part of the problem right now with the national test is other states don't offer us reciprocity because we don't have a national test. And without that national test, our people they may be training here, but if they go outside of our state, you know, they can't get jobs. You know, we're not helping our own
And I think that's part of the education that we need to provide, just to make it clear that this is, you know, why we're doing some of these changes. So to answer Victoria's question, it's not that the status quo is good, but it's good for now. While we just take it back and just do this, you know, one baby step at a time to get the changes that we want. So we would still continue to discuss, you know, the changes that we'd like to see and work through the details. But what we're recommending is to just take it back instead of one giant bill, to just take it a step at a time.
And I get that, but I just heard the argument that, well, there's not that many that really move out of state. I heard that from one of the schools, and it was just like, yeah, but tell that to the person who's moving. Mm. You know, I mean, it means a lot to that person, you know, especially when they move, you know, like I said, six years later, you know, when they have to move, and all of a sudden they're asked to be taking a national test that they haven't been in school for 6 years, have an impeccable job and career, you know, but it doesn't mean that you remember all those little things that you learned, because the test was made, you know, to be taken, you know, and remember, and that's our certification. So and I'm not saying that it's not good for now. I'm just saying that that's my motivation, that I would love to move that. So whether it's education, we just need to know the steps, what we need to do, you know, to help move that forward. Because I believe that is a reciprocity thing, that it is both ways. Because that's the way I understand the word reciprocity.
There are, for the people that have graduated and then move out of state, there are study books, study guides, study programs online to refresh and prepare them for taking the MBLECs and, you know, for licensing in another state. So they do have an avenue, and I like having all graduates, and no matter what state, to take a national exam. I support that on a personal level, but I think that the possibility of having our statutes injured because of that one thing at this point in time, let them get the study guide and take the exam.
I'm not saying right now. That's what I was saying. I said, let's find out what we need to do, and then we can work that down for a further one. But I still think it's, I'm still pushing for that one to be,
I don't have a problem with it,
to be worked out at the right time and brought in. So I just don't want it to be tabled and just forgotten about. So
maybe, Mr. Chairman, maybe the issue you're raising has a jumping off point in light of the reciprocity changes. And maybe, I mean, we should broker or broach the issue with the executive branch and with some key legislative players to see if they see any potential interest. I'm deferring to Greg.
Mr. Chair, Tom, absolutely. I mean, we of course will have the conversation at all levels about what's possible, but we need to think about what is possible and how we will secure support, how we're going to get support in order to achieve the goal that we lay out. Because we know that if we make an effort to, and we succeed, we will demonstrate that we have support. But if we make an effort and we fail, then we may leave ourselves, as Garnet said, exposed, and we don't want to do that. I mean, it's easy to look at what the legislature is doing, what the governor's office is doing, and whether we want to call it a mobility or reciprocity. There is indeed an agenda that we need to pay attention to and make sure that we've right-sized our objectives to what's achievable given the environment. And then we continue the discussion, because in the end, we're here because policymakers made the decision that having you available and around to protect the public was essential. And we want to make sure that that remains the case no matter what.
Are we good?
So, Mr. Chairman, we'll stay in contact with you. We're going to continue our discussions, obviously, with Greg and others. but at future board meetings under executive report or a separate item, we'll give you updates as how this proceeds. You'll be seeing it maybe even as a regular monthly feature. So.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Executive Director's report?
Well, since we just met 3 weeks ago, I don't have a new financial for you because that is still in the pipeline coming to us, but we've had no disbursements this month that would be out of the allocation formula, so there's nothing to report on that. I was going to use this section to ask you, we talked about this morning, do you want to do that now? Or okay. Andrew had something that he wanted to cover with the board before we... Yes.
We have 66 complaints that we're handling up to this point. But at some point, we turn away or direct probably another 120 resources or no action at all. A lot of times it's going to be just like traffic, they believe trafficking or something like that. I send it over to the police department, but they don't keep us updated on what the results are, but they do investigations as they take time. Scottsdale, Gilbert, Tucson, and the department of, department down here, they, I send the planes over to them in the Fusion Center. Open Mason. So they take those complaints and they run with them, but we don't find out what the results are. And I don't find the police business because I don't know. They start putting people, turning swords on people and stuff like that. So best to stay out of their business. Like they kind of know how they want to do. But we have complaints that we receive. We don't take any action on because they have nothing to do with it. A lot of times it's employee, employer type thing. So I direct them to the source they need to go to, which is Better Business Bureau, the clerk's office where that county is staying in. And they can tell them how to file a complaint against that particular location. And you can tell by the complaints a lot of times that this is vindictive employee, the way they say it, you know. They know stuff that only our inside person would know. We don't get a lot of complaints about trafficking of individuals, but people that come from Asia, their contracts are set up before they get here. So you won't see the trafficking here at per se like you would see a black person or a white person being trafficked. Their contract, the unwritten contract, are made in South Korea and places, Philippines, China before they even get here. So, and they have a debt they have to pay, and sometimes it takes up to 10 years for them to pay the debt. So by that time, they involved into the system. Sometimes, it's just like being on the shelter. You go into the system too. For too long, can't come back out, And I've been working undercover for 36 years. I've seen guys get sucked in and they that's the way they live, I wouldn't like that. My wife can play that. But the place we get, I think they're going up. And we get a lot of complaints about unlicensed businesses. You see those when you get in here. And sometimes the individuals they won't even respond because that's not the person that's there. You call their ass, I'll call their ass, like, hey, is Bobby there? Bobby's supposed to be here, So when I type the letters up and I send them, they come back because that person don't exist there. So a lot of people just just start to cause problems. That's why you don't even see those complaints when I'm through with them. They just get stacked up, put it to a drawer, put it, clothes. There's nothing you can do on that. But
we have found that reflexology clinics cooperate better than the freelance massage therapist, because they don't want the police coming around messing around. So they'll go clean their websites up, take down the different things, and go hire qualified massage therapists with license. And that's why we closed those. I think last year this time we had about 20 all at one time. Remember, we did all of them back. Anything else?
No, I just wanted the board to know that we're up at 166 on the formal complaints that Andrew's opened, but I thought it would be of interest that we're like 250 in addition to the 166.
Yeah, that's
still ought to be processed, and Kevin, on the whole gamut of issues.
Yeah.
Some he refers to the state health department, others to local jurisdiction.
We get the ones for the health department where people talk about skin condition of the massage therapy. The cleanliness, you know, that stuff. I had them go to, I'll send an email over to the health department. I tell them to do a written complaint to the health department. So that's another one they don't follow. But we had a bunch of ladies about abscesses on the hand, that type of thing. Yeah, and it's coincidental that they all came in around the same time, so making one of them catching the front.
Yeah, from each other.
You know, same people, you know. They get the boils on their hands, and what was it? It was boils and what else?
Hoof and mouth disease we had.
Get a pus.
Yeah, well, okay. Speaking of film at 11, Andrew gave an interview last week on Channel 12. That's supposed to air on the 22nd of this month. And I'll let you briefly outline what they were looking for.
But they were talking about massage envy. Because massage envy, I had to go back and go through some complaints all in 2005. And I mean, I say it was 130 complaints from massage envy around the state.
Right. Okay.
And their whole thing is have a size envy corrected any action. Well, they have. I told them they have, because they have a strike team now. When a complaint comes in, they suspend that individual right away. They have the strike team interview that individual and the complainant. And at that point, they make a decision, which most likely the individual is going to be terminated. They don't even wait for the final outcome anymore. They're separating the individual just for the accusation. If they can, I think only one person kept their job out of all the ones this last year. So, but the news report is based on, they were trying to base it on the action that happened last November. Remember when it came out? But we only had, I think it was 6 complaints in Arizona compared to North Carolina, when they had 50, and New Jersey had up in the 60s, and New York had a lot more than that.
Yeah.
We didn't have many at all, because we have a good working relationship with the society every year, and they forward the complaints to us right away as soon as they get them. We get a chance to close them out real quick, and that way they ain't hanging around. They give us time to keep our boards clean up there.
So is that news report, is it going to be local, or is it a national?
On Channel 4.
Huh?
On Channel 4.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going any further. I don't know how much they're going to use of me. I talk like I got rocks on my mouth. They don't tell me what they're going to do with me. We talked about an hour.
Okay, I just didn't know if it was local or if it was going to be part of
statewide.
Statewide, or if it was going to be a
statewide.
Okay.
And you know, I had to redact all those complaints. This could be like about 2 weeks to do.
Yeah.
I was going through there, make sure the individual names and stuff wasn't on there.
phone numbers. And I had to, you know, went back again. I'm finding stuff I was missing. I think it was terrible. But they have well, now we're starting to see, like we had Torres that hit last month. You kind of see those guys that have their license suspended back in 12 or 13 coming around trying to get their license back now.
Right.
And just like, I don't know if y'all paid any attention, when you listen to his answers, his words, he hadn't corrected anything. He sounded just like he probably did. Y'all weren't here, but y'all probably, I know you were here.
Yeah, I was here.
Yeah. But he didn't have anything.
Are you talking about a case?
No, it's an old case.
Oh, I thought you were tying it to something.
No. Okay. I was just saying that when he came before the board, when he took corrective action, he tried to see the victim blame. You know, and that's what he was doing the victim blame thing. But I'm just saying that we got those guys that had a license 5 years ago, they come and they try to circle back. Good women do. Their license trying to circle back around, but they're trying to put back in for their license. So.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. So, thank you, Ms. White. Summary of current events. That's it. Was that the current events?
Yeah.
Well, you said that was part of the executive director's. Okay. Discussion and possible actions for future massage board agendas.
Thank you. Good.
More people?
Yeah.
The rains are thin right now, huh?
Yeah, because if one person doesn't show up, we're...
Would you like an inquiry made regarding the status of the vacancy?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll do that. And then... Emily, who's not here today, will be here with you telephonically in the next meeting. So you'll be back up to 3 present, 1 calling in.
Okay. Next massage board meeting date is June 24th, 9:30. 1740 West Adams, Room C, Boardroom C. Meeting clear as eye, 5007.
Do we hear a motion?
I move we adjourn.
I second.
Aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
All right.
I'm adjournment 133.